Minis come in a can.
They were put there by a man in a factory downtown.
And if I had my little way, I'd eat minis every day while I listened to the podcast known as
Trapped Under Plastic, where the D&D classes are Tendi themed and spellcasting is the sauce. Thank you, Foo Free Tech, for that lovely intro.
God damn. I would love to play that game at D&D.
That was fantastic. All right. So obviously your intro was a nursery rhyme of some design.
The Gutty Peepees will know.
The Gutty Peepees.
It is a song called Peaches.
Oh.
My President's of the United States of America. Circa like 1994?
So, okay. I'm going to look really bad right now. But do they also do Some Postman?
Postman?
I think that's the full name of the song. Hold on. We are opening Spotify right now in the preamble ramble. Some Postman. Presidents of the United States of America. Okay.
They sing Lump.
Lump.
They sing Peter Pumpkinhead as a banger. It's not as appreciated. Mm. Peaches was their big, it's kind of a meme of its time. It's a banger of a song, but it's also kind of like a joke song.
Okay. I do have one of their songs on my liked playlist.
What is it?
It's Some Postman.
I'm sure I've heard it, but
it's
now
it's a really good song. Yeah.
Dude, President of the United States of America, they bang, dude.
Dude, they did. They bang.
Dude, they fucking bang it. Dude, you sing Lump, dude. Nothing gets you more pumped than the beginning of Lump.
I doubt that, but
dude. Dude, you're going to ready to lift heavy things above your head.
that was such a specific phrase. Yeah. Lift heavy things above your head.
Yeah. That's what you're going to want to do.
Okay. All right, John. How much do you know about Monty Hall and that game show?
Not much. Isn't that a British one?
I don't know if it's British. I think it's older, though. But it's pretty simple in how it works. There are three doors, and there's a prize behind one door. And you pick a door, and then the game show host, who I believe his name is Monty Hall, will open one of the other two doors, and you will see that the prize is not in that door. And then at that moment, he will give you the option to switch. Do you want to switch to the other door? And what is the correct answer? Do you switch? Do you not switch? What are the odds?
What if the prize is under the first door? It's all moot.
That's the question.
Oh, so they already know because there's only one prize. And
they eliminated an option for you.
They eliminated an option that didn't have one.
And so the question is do you switch?
This sounds like the dumbest game show idea ever.
You know, I'm not fucking right. No, I'll just ask you the question.
So it's a pure psychological game. But how does it change after the second episode?
The prizes change. The people change. The conversations change.
Oh,
love change.
They're talking about.
I don't fucking know. Answer the goddamn question.
No, like, I don't.
Do you switch?
Change. I don't switch.
What are the odds that the prize is in the first door you picked and the second door you picked?
It's 50-50 each time. It's yes or no.
Okay. So this is an example of why sometimes when it comes to statistics, we shouldn't listen to our intuition because you should always switch. This is a classic mathematical problem called the Monty Hall problem. There is a 2/3 chance that you will get the prize if you switch.
Yeah, because one of the doors that they removed was guaranteed not to have it, meaning that there was a 66% chance that you'd pick the wrong door.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, you should always switch.
You should always switch.
I'm a fool.
There's a 2/3 chance that you will always be right when you switch in this specific scenario.
Dude, they probably lost so many washer and dryer combos as soon as the contestants figured out.
There's a critical flaw in their game design.
It's a real basic fucking math. Okay, so this, I feel like there's a deeper dive here, not that you just got on a Monty Hall kick on YouTube.
No, I mean, so it's interesting. This came to in the spotlight in the 90s when someone asked someone a question, a statistician, in like a news column on a newspaper, and she said you should always switch, it's 2/3, and then the whole community of mathematicians like was outraged and like, absolutely not, it's 50-50, are you joking? And then she was like, she asked a bunch of grade schoolers to test out the problem, and they all reported back 2/3 victory whenever they switched. And so, yeah, it's a little bit of a math question. Why is it 2/3? It's like, and you figured it out already. There's a 1/3 chance that the prize could be behind every single door. And so you pick one door, and so there's a 50% chance the prize is going to be in that door, or a 50% chance is going to be in one of the other two doors, right?
Uh-huh.
And so then he the host eliminates one of those doors for you. And so you know that's not another one. And so you started with a 33% chance picking one of three doors. And he made it 50-50 for you. And so one of the other doors is always going to have a higher percent chance that's going to have a prize in it because of that elimination. So the problem isn't related to wargaming at all. But what is related to wargaming is how we shouldn't trust our intuition about stats sometimes. And how and one example that I can think of that we've spoken about a little bit on the podcast is the devious three up. So there's a wonderful site called AOS Stats Hammer that will allow you to plug in various things about your unit to see how much damage it does to a target with two up saves, three up saves, four up saves, with rerolling ones. And it gives you this damage output, like how much damage you're expected to do. And it really, for me, like made me understand like how much damage a Graveguard unit is actually expected to do and how much a Blood Knight unit is expected to do on the charge if they have these various buffs and stuff like that. So I would recommend if you're a wargamer, especially if you're into AOS, check out that website so you can kind of like set your expectations accordingly so you make good choices in the game, but because intuition often misleads us when it comes to stats.
Yeah. Oh, God, that gets me down to the rabbit hole that I always would look yeah, at with the ADP, the average damage percentile.
Oh, right. Yeah, there you go.
And
estimated value, stuff like that.
Yeah, and interesting to see what the cliff is for like the three up versus the four up kind of a thing when you go from 66% to 50%. Yeah. It's only one number bigger, but it's a massive jump.
Yeah.
And what the average curve is for most units for damage. However, there are variables in bonuses that your unit might have,
right,
that can mitigate so that big cliff drop off is more of a gentle slope, and then that makes them a more valuable unit against a variety of different, you know, opponents and stuff.
And right, yeah. And that I used AOS Stats Hammer to like compare various buffs.
Sure.
So I was like how good of a buff is this spell? Is this command trait? Like how good is it that I get the charge off? And you start to see like, okay, like rerolling missed hits is like a huge thing, but like this other benefit isn't as big, but it seemed as big. But yeah, so it's helpful to get a frame of reference.
It's really interesting because I go through a similar thing as I've gone deeper and down the Magic the Gathering rabbit hole, because there's a number of data sites now that especially for online, because they have Magic Arena, because they can compile all this data from hundreds of thousands of games and stuff, and then give you just basically tier lists of how good cards are.
Wow. Okay.
Compared to other things.
Like a power level.
Power level. Wow. And where you, when you're playing a draft and you open a pack and you can pick one card, like it will tell you which is the best card in the pack.
Wow.
So if you knew this. But here's the issue. This is the same thing with the wargaming as it is in a game like Magic.
Mm-hmm.
Is there's a giant asterisk there.
Yep.
In that the numbers do not tell the whole story.
Mm-hmm.
Because just like in Magic, the first card that I took now added for my deck that I picked now has created a singular variable that should affect everything else I do.
Mm-hmm.
And then the more cards you add, the more variables you add, and suddenly those strict data numbers can be thrown out the window.
Yeah, and then there's game state to consider as well, right? Like,
yes.
What's going on? What do I have in my hand that I can use? What was my opponent threatening me with? Like, what's the life totals at?
Yes.
Like, there are so many things about game state that also affect decision-making.
And a wonderful, wonderful term that is great in both of these games, one of the most kind of satisfying, rewarding feelings you get in any of these games is the feeling of synergies.
Mm.
The big S,
mm-hmm.
right?
So the big S.
Right? So it's great that Neferata does this, but when she does this, and then she's next to the Vampire Lord on Zombie Dragon, and then they buff the Graveyard Guard, and then they charge in next to each other, all those synergies work together, and they are greater than the sum of their parts.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the game really starts to feel like it's true to rewarding to the decisions you made in the army you built.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing about both of these, and it's, I mean, I feel that so much in Magic, and I get in arguments with dudes at the arguments, but discussions with dudes at the card shop.
You're
or
at the
my
LGS,
friends.
Just fucking screaming at these people,
and people get really upset. And I have friends that get upset when we're playing and stuff, and they're like, "Because I tend to win." I'm like, it is not just the contents of your deck. It is not just the contents of your list. It is not just the power level currently in the current meta of your army. It is also how well do you know them? How well are you at making decisions? How well are you at playing a chess game where you see 2-3 steps ahead?
Yeah, I feel like that's like the majority of the outcome is your ability to wield your army, right? Mm-hmm.
And that's the wonderful factor that data alone can't tell.
Yeah, and that also allows people who don't have as great a list to still pull out victories despite that, you know, yeah. Or as great a deck.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, so, all right, to dig a little deeper into Magic, there's also, and I feel this is totally doable in games like Warhammer and stuff as well, is there is a social component to this that people underplay so much.
This is your poker background.
Yeah, 100%. Right now, 100%. Yeah. I take this very seriously when I'm having fun.
Okay, I'm just gonna relax a little bit now while John goes off on a tangent.
So there's a new set that came out and it's called Commander Masters, and the whole set is around the Commander game.
Okay,
and so when a new set comes out, you can draft it just like we talked about, where you make your own deck on the fly with the people around the table.
Mm-hmm.
What's different about this set is it's actually when you're drafting it for Commander. So when you draft your decks, you're making Commander decks.
Does it take forever? Because isn't Commander like 100 card decks or something like that?
Well, when you do a draft of Commander, they're only 60 card decks.
Okay.
But you also have to draft your Commanders. So you have to figure out what you're going to build your deck around your Commander.
Yes.
And so we only had 5 people at the store to play. Typically, you want to draft with 8 people, and typically you want to play a Commander game with 4. You can play it with more. We had 5 people. The store owner was like, I'll let you guys decide whatever you want to do. We're like, let's just play. So we play. So we drafted 5 people. We played a game with all 5 people. And the winner, we got prizes based on how you did. And I won that game after it was about 2 hours for us to play the game. And I won the game not because I had the best deck and not because I had some great combo that went off. I won the game because I convinced everybody else that the other threats at the table were the important things to deal with.
Are you allowed? Is there competitive Commander?
Yes, it's called CEDH.
Are you allowed to talk during competitive?
100%. Okay. Diplomacy and making deals is a part of the game.
What?
Yeah.
What is this?
So I'll say to you, and I'm like, look, this guy is going to smash you with this big thing.
This bag of tendies?
Yeah, he's got the bag of tendies sore, and the bag of tendies sore is a 12-12 trample. And if that 12-12 trample hits you, it's either going to kill you or it's going to do a lot of damage, and you're going to be on the brink of death. I'm like, but I have a spell that I can kill the bag of tendies sore right now, so you don't have to deal with it, okay? If I do that, you have to promise not to attack me for the next 2 turns.
Seriously?
Yeah. I'll give you that offering. And I'm like, I'm just trying to stay alive.
You do this in games?
All the time. Wow. You make deals.
Okay, I fucking hate that so much.
Deals. We make deals.
It makes Magic seem like Munchkin, and I fucking hate Munchkin. Now,
a lot of people don't. And a lot of people, but also a lot of Magic players are antisocial assholes and don't do that. But that's the thing, is like I can recognize who I can deal with and who I can't.
Sure.
And you make comrades, you know? Okay. And together, the comrades are strong.
There you go, yeah.
And I mean, it's like, look, your options are, I can help you survive. Oftentimes, I'll do this when your back is against the wall.
You come to when they're desperate.
Right. And I'm not asking for the world. I'm not asking for you to not kill me. And always, when I make deals with people, and I say, okay, you can't attack me for 2 turns, but 1 turn from now, let's say we're the only 2 people left alive, then our deal is off. You can attack me all you want. Okay. I'm not going to say you can't touch me, neener, neener, neener. I get off without impunity. I just want to say our goal is to stay alive and deal with him because he's the bad guy. He's got the bag of tendies sore. He's the mean guy here. Let's deal with him.
I was thinking bag of tendies as in like a bribe, but I love how you turned it into like a monster.
It's a monster. It's a 12-12 trample, obviously.
Obviously, of course.
Yeah, so that means, and that is, okay, to say like making deals and being diplomatic in the game is fun to me. It's not fun for everybody, but there is a way you can play Age of Sigmar where you can do the same thing.
In a 1v1, how do you do that?
I make you feel like we're friends and that I am just over here having fun, or like, oh gosh, here comes the skeletons in the back. And I underplay the value of what I'm doing.
See.
And then eventually those skeletons, Graveguard are technically skeletons, don't worry about them. You can crush their hopes and dreams.
Wait, this feels a little shady now. This is treading into the I'm a liar territory. Well,
that's where poker comes in.
Are you like, don't worry about Graveguard? They're just skeletons. They don't do any damage.
Now, if I'm playing a game with Vince, I can't bamboozle him that way.
Wait, so you play beginners and then you lie to them about their effectiveness?
No, I'm not playing beginners. What I'll do is you position and you'll be like, oh, watch out for this guy over there. Or, oh, gosh, I underplay how scary I think something is when they rush in with their big dudes on bugs for Nurgle or whatever. I'm like, oh gosh, no, you're totally gonna take that point. Oh, my skeletons can't hold that point. In my head, I know those fucking 20 skeletons can hold that fucking point for 12 turns if they needed to.
Skeletons are a fucking brick wall, bro.
But I make them think and affect their decision making based on little things I say.
Wow. So if you played in an AOS tournament, you would implement the strategy.
Yeah, to some regard.
Some
and I don't sit there and I'm not like evil genius scheming, like going, like,
you're using every element of strategy that you can.
Yeah, and it is up to, I am not making decisions for them. I'm not asking them to do anything. I'm not trying to deceive them. I'm trying to, when they're
deceiving them.
When they're at a point of making a decision or they're thinking what to do, I'm trying to nonchalantly guide them in the decision I want them to.
You're trying to affect their inner being instead of them relying on stats. Listen, you know, that intuition. He's trying to slip in some intuition that's not real, though.
And to say that this doesn't happen in every game, in every sport, or in every war ever fought is just being naive to the reality of the world.
I mean,
that happens.
You don't need to compare war to war games. You
know. I'm saying in a game of football or in a game of tennis. You know what I mean?
Interesting. I'm curious what the goody peepees think of this. I don't think it's inherently wrong or right. I'm just curious what the opinion is. I would just not talk to you if you were. If you're talking to me, I'd just be like, okay, I'm just this guy.
Dude, I'm just throwing mind bombs at you, though.
Mind bombs,
dude. If you can walk that field and not hit them, that's fine. That's the fun. That's part of the fun that I have in the game. But I'm also a bit of a crazy weird person, so I also am not doing it to where it's not fun. I'm doing it in a way where I'm still enjoying the game, we're having fun together, we're still laughing, we're still playing the game. But part of my fun is if I feel like I can make you get stuck into those skeletons, when instead I'm like, just don't go after fucking Neferata. Like if I can give you a little nudge, but you got to do it in a way where it makes it feel like that's not what you want. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Like, oh, no. Oh, they can move how far? Oh, shit. And then I bring out my tape measure and I measure things around and I take a little bit longer and I make it seem like I'm really measuring. Could they really get into those skeletons? Could they really do it? Oh, shit, they could.
Yeah, God. I hate you. I hate you so much. You mentioned Neferata twice. Did you know Neferata created vampires in four? In Warhammer Lording?
Oh, dude, so Vince started listening to
Basically, Vince listened to the podcast, and this is what he did the entire time.
Here's why you're wrong.
just endlessly.
Oh, it was great. Well, going back through...
The
last episode, we did the trivia, and we also learned that in Jeopardy, by one of our wonderful commenters on the YouTube, that you can't buzz in Jeopardy before the question is completely read. Actually, what you can do is, I can't remember, they used to be where you could spam the button, and as soon as they opened the light, then the first person did it.
Okay.
But I think they changed that because then that was just an unfair thing where everyone just starts spamming the button.
It's a reflex.
Now it's a time thing.
Yeah.
However, I'm like, oh, and I would have probably, maybe that would have made it better. Maybe that, whatever.
It was a risk versus reward thing.
Yeah. But also in Jeopardy, they have the question on the screen where you can read the question, and Alex still reads it at whatever pace, which is good for the audience, which is part of the reason I think they do it that way, because it's better for the audience to hear the full question and everything, and it probably would have been for us too. But they get to see the question, read it themselves. Probably they're done reading the question when he's a third of the way through, and think and try to formulate their answer. And we didn't really have that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Also, we don't have the technology for the buzzers.
The buzzers. Yeah, I think maybe it'd be interesting to have a whiteboard and you just write your answer down and then flip it around. And then if you're right, you're right. If you're not, you're not.
Oh,
like a deviation from Jeopardy.
Yeah, I like
for this format.
It's a little GMM thing when they have the boards.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, so we can look to evolve for the next time.
A game show.
Dude, we're going to come up with the best game show. There's going to be the best.
When Ollie and Kara are here, I was kind of thinking, because Jeopardy has three players, I would love to write some questions and do a whiteboard variant of Jeopardy for you three.
Listen. if you want to come for the king, you better come hard. I'll tell them what I told Vince. I don't get off this crown easy.
Okay, okay.
You better come with sharpened blades. Because now I got an ego about it. Now I think, I thought, you know.
You're going to mind game people while playing Jeopardy. You'd be like, you don't want to do that answer.
It's like, what if little Tiny Tim, you know, I was Tiny Tim. I thought I was just hoping not to be in the negative and not to be embarrassed. And then one day they're like, Tiny Tim, you're actually King Arthur's heir. And now I'm the fucking king.
Once a future king.
Yeah, and now I'm just like...
You pulled the sword out of the stone.
I knew this all along.
You're like, actually, I'm a god at trivia.
I was destined for this.
I know everything. All right, anyways, that's my preamble-ramble topic. Now on to John.
Oh, okay. So...
I feel like in the past, like in previous episodes of the podcast, I was much more like strict about like progressing the episode.
Mm-hmm.
But now we just let it rip.
Yeah, this is our conversations, the stuff that we would have while we were eating tendies anyway.
Yeah.
And so now we just have other people listening to it, which is fine by me. No, you talk about other things during that, about how mad you are that how many times I've influenced you in your decision making.
I'm so mad about that.
So Gen Con just happened. Did you keep up on any of the things with Gen Con?
I watched some of Uncle Adam's like shorts on Gen Con, like saw some of the booth and stuff. Not a whole lot though.
I think that's a really interesting approach that he took, and I was watching some of his streams leading up to it, really kind of like thinking out loud of how he wanted to approach that, because he was going back and forth about you know, actually making a video on it, and he might still do that, and just coming up with different ways. And it reminded me of what you were talking about yesterday on your painting stream about Adepticon and Adepticon videos, and I've had that too, where they don't particularly perform really well.
Yeah.
When I tied it into the Golden Demon thing, mine's performed well, but it's kind of been an excuse for the B-roll or an excuse for the story that you're telling more than like it is the whole purpose of the video.
But that's clickbait. Like in action, not clickbait, but you are framing your topic in a way that appeals to a larger audience. The word Adepticon to people in the world means something. It means a con. Mm-hmm. It's like people might think, oh, if I can't go, like I don't care about watching, you know, info about it. But Golden Demon, I might participate in that in the future, or I've been to one, or that happens in my area, or it's that like Golden Demon is a bigger term than Adepticon is.
A lot of hype around it.
A lot of hype. So it's like it's just more of an appealing idea. So that's just a way of like you make an exciting video no matter what, but how you frame it to an audience so that they like can like invest in the idea is like that's everything when it comes to YouTube.
Yeah, it is. And there's so much drama around that, and I It's a weird line that we walk with it. In one hand, like I feel defensive about it. In the other hand, I don't want to be, and I understand where people are coming from in their comments. And another thing, hate watching on the internet is a big thing, and people, you know, feel like if they have a controversial opinion that makes them like a badass on the internet.
Yeah, dude. Okay, speaking of hate watching, okay, what? I've gotten really into watching Instagram Reels, like basically TikToks, and I am blown away at how fucking ruthless people are in the comments section. Like the ones that, like, especially the popular ones. If you go to like viral videos on YouTube, I don't know if like the platform has just matured past this, but like yeah, of course there are trolls. If you dig down into like newest first comments, you'll find people who are being despicable. But the most liked and most hearted or whatever, like comments generally aren't that disgusting, but on Instagram, the most liked comments are just fucking brutal. They're so mean. I don't know if you've noticed this or if you have like a platform that you think has just like the worst people on it.
I think it's the system behind how you get to watching those, because it's strictly like it's very difficult for you to go down and find something that's away from the norm of what you watch on YouTube. And when you're that much removed from it, like it's so much easier for the, you know, true nasty people to kind of just come out.
I suppose that's a thing. I don't watch a ton of like videos on YouTube that have like 10 million views or something like that. But right. I feel like my Instagram recommendations recommend me stuff that I like actually like.
Yeah.
But it's still probably pretty popular. Yeah.
If you're like randomly, I have no reason to look through like a Mr. Beast comment section.
Yeah, right.
I'm guessing it's probably pretty harsh.
I think the most liked comments are not going to be harsh. But I think definitely if you get down into like the ones that are like lower, I'm just like the ones that the platform decides to show you, which they pick for whatever reason, like it's not most liked comment always. It's like whatever they want to show you. Those ones seem largely positive on YouTube and elsewhere on Instagram specifically. They're just very very mean.
Yeah. I think it's also the amount of investment you have in it too, because if I'm going to sit through and watch a 15-minute video, one, I have to be invested enough in the content to make it through that far. I guess it doesn't stop you from watching 30 seconds and making a shit comment, because people do that all the time. But like, when you're just scrolling through, you have no investment to them. You have, I mean, they even do on all the shorts stuff, they do, there's very little to recognize who the creator is even. Like, there is no big logo, there is no intro, there is no,
there's no call to action to subscribe to stuff.
Yeah, there's very little connection to this being like a real person, a real thing. It's just kind of like, I just, as you're swiping through. And that side of it is just like, well, there's no repercussions, and then I just swipe through and it's gone forever.
Gone, yeah.
Well, that,
let me know, Goody Peepees. Let me know if you've noticed anything about audiences on various platforms, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and where you find the nastiest individuals. All right, John, what's your fucking preamble ramble? We got to get the show rolling.
I was talking about Gen Con.
Oh, then, shit, right.
And then you said YouTube shorts. And then I don't know where the fuck we went. Instagram. Anyway. I thought that was really interesting. And I, seeing some stuff from booths, our good buddy Danimals the Animals, the rock magpie himself was out there. And you know, just seeing people that we know that were out there talking to Jason from Monument Hobbies yesterday on his stream about what their experience was like. And how many people it is, and how overwhelming and tiring that event is. But I'd still like to go sometime.
Gotta go 1 year, yeah. Well, does it make you hyped for Nova Open?
Yeah, that's where this is going. Is like, just like Adepticon every year, it's just kind of like one day you wake up and you're like, oh shit, that's coming up. And I had that this week, and I was just like, oh fuck, that's like 3 weeks, 4 weeks away, something like that. It's coming up fast.
Nice.
And I haven't done anything for competition painting for it. And I'm probably going to bring the diorama, the vampire diorama again, just to, you know, I mean, why not? And I might work on another piece or two that I already have, you know, done, but like try to push it up. But it's more about the fear that I have of taking shit on planes.
Yeah,
it just makes me so fucking nervous. But yeah, that's a whole nother thing. But yeah, just that, and like thinking about, you know, that this will be the first time I've been to one. I mean, obviously we went to LVO, but it didn't feel as much like a mini painting consortium.
No, I think a huge contributing factor was that we were literally working the entire time.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm just like, you know, and so people are asking, oh, are you going to teach there? Are you teaching at Nova and stuff? And I was like, no. I mean, that's cool. There's a ton of great classes and other awesome teachers and stuff there. And I'm not saying I'm totally against it or whatever. I'm just, you know, I decided to go to a thing. If you were going to teach, like, usually that's like months and months in advance where you agree to that from when the tickets go on sale and you decide to go. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just like, no, I mean, I totally do one. And I had fun teaching at TMX.
Mm-hmm.
But if I do it, I do those like one and a half hour classes, man. Those are so much fun. So. But yeah, it's coming up quick. And so I'm sure I'll do a recap. That's probably going to be two episodes from now from kind of what my experiences are. The other thing is that I talk about preamble ramble today is that we're actually recording this a couple days earlier than we usually do. And that is because my tattoo artist had a cancellation for this Friday, which is when we usually record the podcast. And I snuck in and grabbed that day. So I got another full day work coming on the sleeve. And then I already had another day scheduled for September 15th. Which is an off Friday when we're not recording, because I could book out ahead of time. So I got two more sessions booked. So
Is that going to be it?
I'm fucking railing it. No. It's probably going to be at least one more, maybe two more.
Holy cow, dude.
Yeah.
You've made so much progress in the first one. I'm struggling to see
He's pretty efficient with his time.
Is it going to go around here as well?
Yeah, so I got three. Okay. It's going to go full all the way up to the shoulder, and I want to be like that there's no skin.
Okay.
That's kind of my goal, or very little skin. So I got three more main features that are beyond it, and it's just like, well,
upper arm outside, kind of upper arm inside, and then lower arm inside is kind of the general thing, although there'll be more wrapping and moving around than simply is that. But thinking that you did one thing in one session, you could roughly do one full thing in each session.
So did you just do the snake? There are no other animals at this point on the arm?
Yeah, yeah, yep. Okay. Just the snake and the skull is the first one. And the other three are all aminals.
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 Yeah. All right, wonderful.
So yeah, that's pretty much it. I mean, the other stuff to talk about is what we're going to talk about and what we painted. Some wackiness going on.
Let's do it. I painted, I don't know, this Yafseti Walker. There's not a lot
fucking of floppy hat lady over here.
Floppy hat lady. There's not a lot of detail on this mini. And I was like, huh. It made me think about painting in a little bit of a different way, because normally the issue with a model is I have to expend a lot of energy to figure out where all the colors should go to make a harmonious scheme, and there's too many options. And now with this one, there aren't enough options.
Yeah, you almost feel obliged to do some kind of a weird freehand shit exactly. On all that robes.
Yeah, so there's three things on this model. There's this netting, there's this big billowy shawl, and there's like this hat thing with has like a face cover, and those are the three elements. And there's a hand, but the hand is, you know, just like a
one piece of skin.
Yeah, just skin. Yeah. So I painted it. Didn't take that long. And then I was kind of like, huh, this doesn't look very good. And so now I'm thinking maybe if I wanted to change it to make it look better, I would do freehanding on the purple thing that included black. Or I could do freehand on the black thing that included lilac of some kind to kind of like tie the two things together. I haven't put tufts on it. And I also want to put like sand, like a dusty sand effect along the bottom of a rope. Mm. So that's still something I want to do to the model. And that won't take very long.
Yeah.
But I'm probably not going to freehand on it, if I'm being totally honest. But if I were to do it again and I wanted it to look better, I would consider something like that for sure.
Yeah. Not every model has to. You know, have such a large amount of Balsac involved.
This is true.
I think it looks good. Now you have one feature piece on it, which is her mushroom hat and veil thing, and that's creepy and cool.
Yeah, I love the models. They're super cool. Yeah. And so I'm one model closer to finishing my Yafsiga warband.
Yeah, so I think that can be, you know, that can be that. You know, if we can not have to like overthink and like over design and overpaint everything we do, and that's, I think, true. This is cool.
Yeah. I do think it could look better though. If I made choices like that. So I think there's an opportunity there, but it'd be after some amount of time investment. So yeah, it's kind of picking, you know, is that worth it? Is it not? I'm probably not going to do it, but
well, that and the decisions you make on okay, say like I want to do something else to make it more standout-ish. Then you have to think, do you want it more standout-ish in the where I'm holding it now, 6 inches from my face, or do you want it more standout-ish at the tabletop where it's 3 feet away? And those are different answers because those are different questions.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I was thinking something like you could have it look like there was like a, like right around where her mouth would be. It's just like wet blood.
Yeah, that's like her fucking mouth. That's cool.
That's gross. But that's cool up close. It's not as noticeably interesting at a distance. At a distance, the hat and the really interesting color there is a perfect. It's more of like, oh, what more craziness did you want to do on all of this like bed sheet that she's wearing?
Yeah, basically a bed sheet.
Yeah.
The other thing is that if I paint the rest of the unit in that same way, will it feel more cohesive?
I think it'll look more cool, culty, kind of creepy.
I know. They remind me of Bene Gesserit from Dune a lot. And I talked to the sculptor who did this, which is one of the co-owners of Blackside Studios. And he was like, yeah, that was they were a huge inspiration for these models. And I was like, oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
And then lastly, I spent a lot of time resupporting these fucking vampire infantry models that I had already supported, and I deleted the files and I redid it, and I already printed them in brittle resin, and I wanted to print them in this more rubbery resin, so like they're more durable for wargaming, because they have like halberdiers, they're like basically spear shafts that are super thin, and they snap so easily.
They're gonna snap.
Yeah, and sure. So I spent some time to resupport the models and to use a resin that I know was durable, and I use this resin called Hero resin, which apparently isn't available, at least the one that I have, the teal variety. And yeah, it's definitely more flexible, and so I feel good about that. And I'm converting them a little bit. Unfortunately, the STLs for these models do not come with separate heads, but they sell separate heads for them. And I emailed the people, and I was like, what gives? Like, why did the STLs not come with like headless so I can use different head options? And apparently the heads were made as an afterthought for some other reason. Mm-hmm. And it happened to work with these models. And so I'm having to chop the heads off very carefully and glue on these other heads that I prefer, because I don't like the feather on the head, which comes from the normal STL. And I have like a dragon motif going on in my army, or at least mm-hmm. the backstory for my army. And so I like these kind of dragon wing kind of head things on this dude. I got to do some neck sculpting like I mentioned to you at the beginning of the podcast. But that's it. I'll do a little head swap, and then I'll put on their halberdiers, and they have like a little sword they have holstered, and then I'll paint it. And so this is the last unit, a 10-man unit of GG is the last unit I need for my 2,000-point army of fully painted and fully based minis. And okay, I'm going to make a video, and it's going to be called something along the lines of I accomplish a lifelong hobby goal. And let me tell you, I have literally never had a fully painted and based army in my life. That is 2,000 points, like the playable amount of models. The only one I ever had was a commission for Blood Angels, and I gave it away, obviously, instantly. I've had like various stages of completion for my Middenheim, for my Necrons, for my Space Orcs, for my Wood Elves, for my Vampire Counts later on, but I never got to 100% completion. So this is such a huge thing for me, and I'm so excited just to put them all on the table and just be like, fuck, and just feel really happy about that.
Yeah. That's pretty sweet. The end is in sight. And 10 man is not...
That's nothing. That's nothing.
Yeah, it's more of the point to getting to where you can actually take out your paintbrush because...
Yeah, the fucking 3D printing.
Yeah.
Being a bitch right now.
I was thinking you were saying you're going to take their heads off. I was like, oh, you're going to go in like the 3D sculpting software.
That is an option.
And just cut them out, carve it out. That's probably more of like it's a whole nother learning experience in and of itself. Once you could do that, it would probably be so much faster, but like, the sheer amount of hours it would take you, it's probably faster to do what you're doing, snip off the heads, you know, Dremel it out, and then put a different head on.
It takes me like 5 minutes a dude. There's 8 dudes because the musician and the squad leader don't have helmets. And it's just like the 40 minutes, hour, maybe. That's worth it. Like, I don't want to have to do what you're saying. It's just like kind of learn that thing. But that is a solution. You could do something with like Blender and cut the heads off.
Yeah, it is a... It is a, you know, 8 dudes, not 40 dudes.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that, so, yeah.
That's doable.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. Yeah, and I like the Yafsiga model. And that resin looks really nice.
Thank you. Yeah, yeah. There's a lot. So this kind of set me on a rabbit hole about trying to find the resin everyone recommends for tabletop wargaming. And what I discovered is there is no recommendation. There's some sites will like list the same resins, but they're the resins that like come with printers shipped in the box. And it's like, okay, like what, like what's, who made a resin for wargaming? Like that is equal parts, detail retaining, durable. And that's kind of it. Those are the things I care about the most. I don't care about price. I don't care about print time. I care about those two things the most. And I found one, but it's $90 a liter. It's called Amerilabs TGM-7. People talk about it. It's great, but it's insanely expensive. So I don't know. I don't want to mix resin. I don't want to do that if I don't have to. I know people can do that, and I know it's probably the best thing to do, but I want to just find a product that just works. I don't want to fuck with measuring cups and making a ratio. I want one thing in the bottle just to be the right thing.
Yeah, and you want to be able to go out there, find a resource where people have done the testing or done the research themselves and then can give you an answer. Because that's the kind of thing of like figuring out yourself, first of all. There's a fucking billion of them out there.
It's a billion.
And ain't nobody got time for that. And then to be able to get the resin, then get it calibrated, because each resin works differently on your printer, and you can't just use the same specs that you're using on your other resin and have it print the same way. Yeah. That's the biggest thing for me, why I don't fuck with resins. It's because I actually could print this out, and I don't know if this is actually good or bad, or how many times I have to keep printing and printing to get the specs the way I want them, and then determine from there. I'm just like, you can just see the hours just piling up and piling up.
Like the push-pull in 3D printing is amazing. Like everything affects so many other things. And it's just like this. Also, I always like, I have like a foray into 3D printing like once every 3 months. And when I was doing it this time, I actually like went through the settings for resin exposure, and I was like, what do all these things mean? Like, what is retract speed? What is lift speed? What is lift height? What is, like, rest after LED on? Like, what do every single one of these things mean? Like, and what are the best practices for all of these stats? And so I did that. I took time to kind of figure out what they all meant. Mm-hmm. And it's just crazy. It's crazy how much fine-tuning you can do. And another thing, it is crazy how much faster your print is if your lift height is appropriately set and also the speeds are fast. Mm-hmm. Like, because you're doing, think about it, you're doing like 2,000 layers of printing, right? Mm-hmm. And so if your thing is moving a little bit faster, that impacts every single 2,000 one of those layers. Right. And so it saves you, like, if you just go a couple millimeters faster, it saves you hours on the print. It's insane.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's crazy. Like, the more I look into it, the more I just am like amazed at like how much fine tuning you could do if you wanted to.
It's such a separate hobby. It's like we're in this really weird spot, and I'm really curious about where 3D printing goes in the next 5 to 10 years, because the technology is new, but the support, the resources, the expertise being widely available isn't yet. So if you're interested and you see the potential, or you see what cool other things people are able to do with it, then there's a lot of onboarding with people to do it themselves. Right? Yeah. And then you realize how much effort it is, how much time it takes, how much expertise and research it needs to really be good at this. And I think a lot of people have hit that wall in the last 3 years and a lot of printers are sitting there collecting dust.
Yeah.
Or they're making a thing not nearly as good as that machine is capable of making because of all those other factors.
All the fine tuning you can do, all that human error.
At some point, does the industry flip more towards it's all possible, it's more efficient and better for me to go through an expert and just have them make the thing for me?
I think, to answer your question, I think the printing world is moving toward ease of use. At least some printers are.
Yeah.
Also, I want to say that you can really dip your toes in 3D printing and not go insane and have it work for you. You can buy pre-supported models that are well supported. You can use default resin printing times. You can use the resin your printer came with, and you can get a lot done with just doing that. I'm a psychopath, and I need to know that what I'm doing is the perfect thing. That's a me problem. But to answer your question, I think it's going toward convenience. I don't know, but here's an example of one that is. There's a printer called the Athena. It's actually made by a bunch of Canadians and Germans. And they have this new feature that I haven't seen in a printer before, where the build plate itself can detect force. And what it uses that for is when the build plate is lifting up after it has cured a layer, it detects when that cured layer detaches from the FEP, and it knows that it's on the build plate. And so you don't have to set a lift height, because the thing automatically detects when it happens. That's a whole variable eliminated. No thinking.
Wow.
Which is good, because the FEP, over time, it stretches. Mm-hmm. So that value, it moves on you, right? It
pulls away.
Exactly. So you have to adjust for that over time, and now you don't. You have a guaranteed thing. Not only does your print go faster, but you don't have to set that value at all. There's no thinking.
Does it have a sensor if it, like, when it doesn't release or a part of it is still stuck, it stops the print?
Yes. So it'll tell you when it breaks.
When
the print fails. And so that, so I don't, you know, you don't print a bunch of fucking resin at the bottom of your vat. And so that is amazing. Vats with heaters in them, amazing. The Saturn I got has a purifier built into the hood. Crazy.
Air purifier
built into the hood. Like I want to see a better design for how to level the build plate. Like, having four screws you turn independently, like, deal, you know, kind of gives you a little bit of that. I want a better design for how to, like, level that. So I kind of see it moving into this world of a little bit easier to do. Like, we're kind of like, we're in hard mode right now. We're in, like, the rotary phones of 3D printing, and we haven't got to the smartphone yet.
Oh, right? I was thinking of more of, like, we're dealing with Model A Fords, okay. which is like, this is an awesome thing. It's faster than a horse. You don't got to feed it. It doesn't shit. You know, it still gets you from A to B. You don't have to buy the models from the store. You don't have to pay their outlandish prices. You can print whatever you want. You know, you can drive wherever you want.
Right.
You don't have to stable the thing. Okay. And that's different from then a vehicle that's got anti-lock brakes and power steering
yes.
and all these things
exactly
that
yes.
make the experience better for you. And that makes me really hopeful that the market is big enough, that the potential is big enough.
Oh, it is.
That the engineers that Germans are known for this, the German engineering to really make it an experience that is far beyond the very technical, this is what the task it accomplishes, but how it makes it better. That's exciting. If we could, all I would say is if we can get a high level 3D printing company that isn't based in China, then I'm suddenly excited about what the next ceilings we can burst through and are, because they're all made over there. They're all made with the same dumpy parts. They're all like, come halfway busted, or you can't take it out of the box and it works. I've had one. There's one brand that I've had that doesn't do that, and it's just like, it would be really nice if we could get there. Man, that makes me really excited again.
Yeah, if the Athena had a warming vat, I would buy it instantaneously.
Yeah,
because just in Minnesota, it gets really cold, and like it drops below like I don't know, in my basement, like maybe like 65 or 60, it gets really cold. So like the resin doesn't really work very well.
Yeah. Use those brewer's belts.
I do. I use that. It's a hack.
I do too. Right. Yeah. It is a very like unscientific approach to trying to deal with the situation.
Yeah,
but it is what it is. But yeah, that is awesome. I think that would be great if we could move more in that direction, and I will pay more.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely. You know, it's not like they're getting the big direction that 3D printers have gone in the last couple of years is like, it seems like they just want better resolution. They want better resolution, which we do, which is a big thing. And that's come a long ways in a very short period of time. And they want the prices cheap.
Yeah.
Right. So they can keep moving it. So you got the 2K. Now we're going to make now you want to buy the 4K. Now you want to buy the 8K. So how do we do that?
12K, baby. There's a 12K now.
Jesus Christ.
But I have the in there. The Saturn Ultra 3 is a 12K printer.
Like,
it's insane.
At some point, that doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't. You know? Yeah, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. What's more important is reliability, consistency, and for it to do the thing you need it to do as efficiently as possible, in the short amount of time as possible, not the breakdowns. And so in order for them to keep the prices low, what do? Well, they got to compromise somewhere, right? And mm-hmm. so whether that's just the quality of the
materials.
Stability of that bar that it runs on, whatever that's called.
Or the time spent innovating on other parts of the printer, R&D.
So I probably have had four generations of printers since I started buying them. And the vast majority, very little has changed. Very little, other than you get either a nicer looking LCD on the front with a little bit more like touch screen and see the things you're doing.
Yeah.
But that's
maybe the vat comes out easier and has like nicer screws and stuff.
Very
and
minor
like
things.
That. Yeah. So I'll say that when I moved from the frozen 4K to the frozen 8K, the Z axis strengthened up a ton.
Yes.
So that was a nice thing. But yeah, most of it is just consumer facing improvements.
Right. Yeah. The when I got the frozen 8K, comparing that to my previous three AnyCubics, I'm like, whoa, this is. They definitely invested in making that really, really sturdy and stable. And you realize how important it is, because it still is at the end of the day. It's a very like manual thing it's doing, right?
Yeah. And it's so fine tunable. It's insane. But yeah, I printed these on the frozen AK. That's the one that's still I've been using. I don't know, for a year and a half, 2 years, whenever I got it last.
It's my only one I use because it's reliable and I have it tuned in and I'm too lazy to tune in other ones.
Yeah, I mean, you shouldn't. Honestly, that's where I want to get with 3D printing. I want to have a resin for display models, a resin for wargaming models, and just like beautifully tuned settings, a machine that's in an environment that doesn't change a lot, and that's all ready to rock. And so whenever I want to do anything, print, go. I don't want to think about it. Yeah. Like I want to think about it a lot in the beginning and then never again. Yeah. That's what I want to do.
You pull up your software, you pick which resin off the tabs on the top, okay? It's going to be a gaming model, so I pick that one, boop, mm-hmm. and then all the settings are saved, and mm-hmm. you just flop them in there and hit print.
Yes. And so I got my display mild parameters figured out. I like how that's working out, but the gaming stuff, I want to experiment with some stuff still. All right. That was a very long session for me. I'm sorry. You painted this, and I want to know why you picked this. So explain.
Okay. So for my next video, my plan was, or my hope was, that I'd get the Kingdom Death Gambler's Chest in the mail, and I was going to do a video on the most awaited miniatures of all time.
Because that's shipping.
Yeah.
And what has it been? 6 years?
Seven.
7 years.
Yeah, 7 years. And so it is, there's a lot of drama around it on both sides. The
really? Drama? Is this not an amazing thing?
I mean, the fact that it's taken this long and all the things around that company and their chicanery is pretty deep.
Honestly, I'm happy that you're getting the models. I thought for sure we were going to like just see this company like just disappear and go nowhere. Yeah.
And part of the decisions that they've made, why things have taken so long, are in order to keep the company going.
Right, of course. You got to make money, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not like the millions and millions of dollars they've made off their Kickstarters. Apparently, that wasn't enough. But anyway, so that was the plan. And that video is still going to happen. I found out that I'm going to get it like in 2 days from now, which is like a week behind when I really needed to get it to do it. So I was like, I had no video idea. I had no idea what I was going to do for video. So I just go in my closet and I just start looking at models. And so trying to figure out something that excited me. And I, you know, was looking at those Void Scarred, you know, from that Kill Team box. And then I had this other box that was Chaos versus the new Eldar. And I saw the jet bikes, and there's these new jet bikes where there's two dudes on it. There's the rider, and then there's dudes with the sniper rifles. And those are just so fucking cool. And I've always thought they were cool. And I was just like, I had this vision of like this scene, because there's one of them, they're in units of three, and one of them, the dude on the back, because the rider is really well posed. It's hard because it looks like he's sitting up straight there, but how he's posed on the bike, he is leaning super far forward. Like he is going fast. And then he's going meow, and then like those cloaks are going straight back. So if you put him at the angle where that's basically straight on the horizon, that is the angle he's at. In one of the sculpts, the dude on the back with the sniper rifle is also kind of having to lean forward because of the speed that they're going at. And he's just got his, in that at ease pose we talked about last week, where he's got his hand up
resting
here.
Yeah.
And he's leaning forward and his thing is going back. And one of the heads, he's got a sweet ass like Mohawk ponytail, and that's going straight back. I'm just like, what if this thing is flying really fast? It's kind of like it's veering to the side. It's skimming the ground over this. And I could just envision this thing. And I'm like, I want to do that.
Man, yeah.
I want to do that. So like, I found this on like Sunday, and I'm trying to figure it out so I can get ready for Monday. And I just decided. I'm like, I have to decide, and this excites me. And so I don't know where I'm going with it other than I got it all built. It took me almost a full freaking day to build it, and then I did a display planthonics. I'm like, I have the right size display.
You don't play Dark Eldar, right?
Yeah, and I'm like, if it's going to be at a kind of a scenic pose and stuff, I got these display paints. I'll just put it on there. I don't know if I'm going to paint it for display or whatever. And building the base and sculpting like the ripples in a sand dune, and that took me a bunch of the day. And then getting everything, kind of the angles lined up and drilling the holes for the wing of the jet bike and everything. So that took me a full day.
Did you like do any Google searching for like fluid dynamics as to like how sand would move, or like what kind of like wind, like turbine or tunnel, like a thing like this would make? Like,
well, based on the size of the base, you don't have a ton of that. So right. What I'm going to do next, which it feels like the waves of sand. That feels pretty good. Although when I sculpted it all with epoxy sculpt, and then when I went over it with a watered down sand, like it's a really fine sand, desert sand texture paste, and I watered it down a bit too, so it's quite thin. It still feels a little bit thicker than I wanted.
Okay.
So there's little I can do with that, but what I can do is I got to find a way, and I think it's with taking like clear thin plastic and almost cutting that in like little jagged like sawtooth things pushed back at an angle, and I'm going to glue those down kind of in a V shape where this wing is skimmed the top of the sand, and it's like kicking up sand behind it, you know, it's like waves.
Yeah.
Just to give that extra movement and pushing that away. I think that's the thing I need to do. I still need to figure that fucking thing out, but I had that idea the other night. So then yesterday, it was the first day I sat down and painted. And that was like 6 hours of painting right there, maybe seven. And it was like, I realized like, oh, fuck, I'm going too hard on this. Like, but I was just having so much fun. And it's not like display level, but it's not that far below. It's like I wanted to get to where I was really like kind of box art level. And then
it's definitely there.
And then to decide from there, can I do it to a certain level where if then I wanted to compete with it and I felt like when it all came together, it looked good enough that I could then go back and like really put some extra hours to really push it.
Are you noting down paints that you're using?
Well, it's all in the video. I show the stuff. So, but then I keep it in a pile. So then I'll like line them all up and take pictures. I learned my lesson with that when I did that grotesque thing.
Because, yeah.
So yeah, that's, I just had fun with him and I learned too that I just fucking despise scale 75 paints again.
They work for me. I don't know.
I don't know if there's something off with mine. I just shake the fuck out of them, put them on the thing forever on the vortex mixer, shake the shit out of them. If I thin them down to a glaze, a thin glaze, not just like a thick glaze, but a thin glaze, they're great. Anything thicker than dirty paint water, they are so inconsistent in where if you put a smooth, silky brush stroke across the surface, it looks like I'm a fucking 3-year-old with finger paints. Like it does not leave the model consistently and smoothly. I do not understand it. It is so frustrating. How the pigments pile up or where they go is not how a brush stroke should leave it. And I just, because all that leather I had to like redo a couple times because there's black leather and red leather on that. And those are colors that work. And I've used, I swear I've used yours like when we did the box art for your warrior. I used like your birch. I used your field gray. I used some other stuff. And I do not remember them working like that. I don't know if my whole fucking set was like just sat in a 120 degree oven before it came to me. And I've never had it work. They've never worked the way I wanted to. And that's why that set is largely sat unused for the 5 years that I've owned it.
Okay. I was going to suggest maybe because you aren't using it and not regularly shaking it and like stuff like that, maybe it's just like settling so much that like to really get down in there, you need to put a brush in there and like mix it up to like kind of bring it back to a place where shaking it does matter.
I mean, that could be, but like I did it two times. I mean, I did like 15 minutes of working with the shit. And then I'd even go so far as I would make sure that it came out of the bottle where it looked the way you want it to look.
Then I have no
And then it did.
Yeah.
And then I'd still like, I'd goop a big thing of it out on a paper towel and get rid of it first, thinking maybe it's stuff in the top. So I'm further down the bottle. I did it. And I still did it. When I put it out on the palette and even like, even on the palette, it was like when I'd thin it with a little bit of water, it like already was like doing this weird fucking amorphous shit where it's like,
yeah, I would,
pigments wanted to stay together instead of smoothing out.
If I were you and that was a paint range I was using, it'd be dead to me instantaneously. I'd never use it again.
It's just why a year goes by between uses of it. But some of the colors I really like. All their leather colors, I love.
Yeah.
Like certain ones of their wood range, I love. A couple of their grayish stuff, that's like a grayish blue and a grayish
purple.
Grayish green. Like they're great colors. And I just, but they actually, if I got to fight them, fuck them.
Yeah. There's too many options out there that you don't have to fight.
But anyway, so. Yeah, I just
the yellow jacket color because it's really giving me
Sandry dust.
That's Sandry dust.
No, it's not Sandry dust. It's Talleyrand sand.
Okay,
Talleyrand sand.
Is that GW paint?
It is a GW paint.
I really fucking like that ochre color
a lot. Isn't it sweet?
It's really nice.
That was the last thing I did yesterday. I'm like, because everything else was painted and that was pure white, and I was like, I need to get a color on here to really feel this desert vibe is working because
it's good.
His scheme. It's one of the craft worlds. It is, I can't remember which craft world it is because I'm like, if I end up ever entering this for a golden demon, I got to make sure it's an official color scheme, not my version of a desert thing.
Yes, yes, you know? Yes.
So I'm like, but I also need to feel attached to it and excited to paint that scheme. And so there is one that goes from like a deep red up to like an orangish yellow on the top. And then their helmet is like a brighter yellow. But the cool part about it is it's not like a wet blend. It's each, because they have a lot of panels on Eldar, and each panel, it goes like red, 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 orange, red, orange, 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 yellow, yellow. And so it is a blend as it goes up, but because they're so paneled,
you're gonna recess shade it with like oils and stuff.
Well,
or not this, yeah.
Yeah, because it's paneled, then you can just do it in layers, which is what I did.
Oh, okay. I was thinking you're going somewhere with the airbrush, because that also lends itself to the airbrush really well.
And because these, what are they called? They're not scouts, but something, the dudes that have the cloaks, Eldar dudes that are cloaks, there's a certain term for them. And those, it feels like there's a much more leeway on how you paint those. They're not tied to the craft world necessarily. It seems more tied to their environment,
okay,
or the camouflage, which is great, because then I'm like, okay, I picked the cloak then basically off of the kind of desert area that I'm going to do.
Cool.
So it's going to feel that way. And then their leathers on their, like these guys got chaps, and then their leather gloves and stuff are more, seems like environmental things, and that fit with the desert theme too.
Yeah, yeah. That yellow is sick. I'm gonna go buy it probably for my Dark Eldar army. I've looked for a great ochre color, and Scale has one called Oroko. That's kind of nice, but I like how
it's almost a hint of
saturated.
It's very saturated, and there's almost like a hint of green to the yellow.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely a little sickly, but it's definitely a nice color. It's so crazy that you and I had the exact same idea about how to get rid of the flight stand for an Eldar ship.
Mm-hmm.
I want to do a Razorwing jet fighter where he's zipping through, and I got a big base to work with that. Yeah. So I'm gonna have like a curved line where it's like you can see like the ravine of sand still midair as this massive ship going at like insane speeds, just like. It's such a Dark Eldar thing to like fly close to the ground at like a bazillion miles an hour.
Yeah.
So I was like, yeah. And of course, the flight stand is stupid looking. And also, it angles the razor wing up in a really bizarre way. And yes. So you can't see like the cockpit and shit. So I also want to give that a shot. I'm looking forward to see how you do it, and I'll steal your good ideas.
Yeah, I don't know. I could send you pictures of it.
I'd love to see it.
I have a small little like a sandstone tactical rock that's coming out, which is just my way of being able to drill in a little bit and to have it adhered to something firm with the paper clip.
Yeah, yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So you just need some point where it's just not, you're not entirely living on a wing and a prayer that it holds up.
Yeah.
Especially the weight, like something you're talking about. The better thing you have to deal with is you've got more depth in the edge of that wing to drill into it. These things, it was a scary thing, and it's still only in maybe an eighth of an inch.
Yeah.
So it's not going to barely hang, but yeah. So, I was having fun with this, and I just had a good time with it. Obviously the gems and stuff aren't done yet, but like,
it looks crispy and clean.
Yeah. That was kind of what I was going for. And it was like, well, I didn't have it, cause I'm just like, I just need to get working. I just need to get painting. So I just like, I'm not going to worry about how I'm going to paint it. I'm just going to paint it. And then I just ended up doing this.
Yeah, see, when my plans for a day get fucked up, I just do a bunch of useless work all day long. I don't actually like start something new.
Yeah, I mean, some days I do that, but I feel terrible the entire time I'm doing it.
I know, so do I.
And then dinner time comes, and I'm just like,
you're just angry.
Oh, fuck me. All I've done is made it more work for myself the rest of the week.
I know, but like, I feel like sometimes when you do that, the work you're doing is still important. It's just like not immediately important. And so it's like, it just feels like you're not doing anything. But like, if you go through and like answer 60 unread emails, that's still really valuable, even though it took you 4 fucking hours to do it.
Yeah.
It just feels so bad.
There's so much bullshittery when you got to do everything yourself in your small business.
I had an interview for a guy writing a book about how religion and wargaming are related.
Email me too. I didn't email him back yet. Whoops.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But so like that was one of the, I mean, that wasn't bullshit, but that was just one of the other things that I had to do. And then I have another meeting this week about someone who was like, yo, Scott, I took your idea for a dueling war game, and like, I have a rule set that I want to show you, and I want to demo it to you. And I'm like, anyways, I don't talk about it now, but that's another thing that I have going on this week that's not, making the video. But yeah, it's a lot of stuff going on.
That is the life we live. But anyway, the Goody Peepies don't want to hear about that. What they do want to hear about is today's topic, which is mini question hacks.
That's how we're calling it.
That's what I'm calling it right now.
Okay.
So we're gonna somehow work that into the video title and or thumbnail.
We've been locked in.
Yeah, we are doing hacks on your mini questions. So oftentimes when we get wonderful questions from our patrons. So it was being a patron of our show. You help support it so we can keep making these episodes. And you get some nice perks, like you can submit your minis for us to critique in the after party. You get full access to the after party, which is our post show, which is another 15 to 30 minutes of each episode. And we can critique your minis. And you can also submit questions to us, and they can be, we can use them for topics of the episode. And we get a lot of those questions, and got a lot of interesting question comments, funny jokes coming through from our wonderful patrons. And a lot of them aren't quite big enough or have enough weight for them to be a full episode. And so what we're going to do is compile a bunch of these interesting but shorter questions, and we're going to rapid fire give you the mini question hacks edition of Trapped Under Plastic.
All right, first question is from Chris Lawyer. He has speed painting techniques or tips on brush control. I will take tips on brush control.
For 500, Alex.
For 500. Gotta wait until the question is read. okay, so brush control is all about getting as close as possible to wherever the tip of your brush is landing on the model. Choking up on the brush, touching the model where that brush tip is landing. That is one of the key things. Other thing, think about your fingertips. Fingertips have the most dexterity of all the joints in your body. Imagine trying to paint a model where the only joint you used is your shoulder. Now your elbow. Okay, a little bit easier. Now your wrist. Okay, now your fingertips. You know, the fingertips have the most dexterity in them, so use them. Like, use the brush, hold that in such a way where you can really control that thing. And secondly, we've said it before, points of contact. Elbows, forearms, hands, fingers on the model, everything. Touch everything you can, and you should have great brush control.
Just touch it. Yeah, so that I mean, Scott touched on something that was really valuable there, is that as many of your fingertips can be touching, using those with the brush, the better. Because that means you have more precise control. So ideally, I mean, I think most people, you have three. You got your pointer finger, your middle finger, and your thumb. And the tips of those should be what's holding the brush.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you want to see what not to do.
I know where this is going.
You should check out this YouTube channel called Vince Venturella and watch any of his videos and watch how.
Sure.
Watch how he holds his brush and do the exact opposite.
Or Goobertown.
Goobs does it too. They cradle the brush in between the web between your thumb and your fingers, and they got this freaking vulture grasp. And very few of the tips of their fingers are being used. And to their credit, those guys can paint quite well for completely hamstringing themselves.
For like holding the brush like a Neanderthal.
Like, Vince, think about how good of a painter you could be if you just started holding the brush like an artist.
He's too deep.
I know. Now I'm sure back. It's completely uncomfortable, and it would set him back five years, yeah. Whatever. But it's the same thing with like when you learn to play guitar. You're not supposed to put your, it's comfortable, especially when you start, to hook your thumb. So you hook your thumb around the neck of the guitar, because your thumb can then be used as like a fulcrum to make sure your fingers go where they're supposed to go, and that's wrong. You're supposed to keep your thumb in the center of the back of the neck, and then your fingers go up around. That gives you the most flexibility and most ability to hit everything you want and to be able to move wherever you need to go, because you always have the center point of which to gravitate from. It's always consistent. But if you've learned it, and some of the greatest guitar players ever don't do that, like Hendrix has a hooked thumb all the time. Mm. Obviously, he's pretty good at guitar.
Yeah.
But when they teach you what's better in an ideal world, that you use the correct posture. Okay, for me, speed painting techniques.
Also, hold on, with the brush? Choke up on the brush.
Choke up. Yeah. Way up there.
If the brush is far away from the source that you're painting, way harder to control.
Okay. Yes.
Speed painting. Go.
Speed painting. It's in your shoulders. What I mean is,
it's in your diet.
When you are trying hard, when you are trying to get best brush control, you're tense. You are every more of your body is tense. You're focusing harder. You're thinking about getting everything perfect and correct. When you're speed painting, it is of my opinion that you should be more relaxed. You should be more enjoying the process. You should not be worrying so much about exactitudes. And this goes from your physical approach, and it's mirrored by your mental approach. When you are doing this for fun, you should be more relaxed. Your body should be more relaxed. You should not have so much pressure on yourself. You should be just about enjoying the process, having fun, and not worrying about all the little shit. And if that is going well for you, you will enjoy the process and you'll get better at speed painting just because it wasn't a stressful endeavor.
Okay.
Okay, next question.
Thank you, Chris, for the question. We have the next one from Cody. Is it all right to buy models with the knowledge that they will keep their value over time? Do models keep their value over time? I think Cody is looking for permission to buy stuff.
Yeah, he wants to buy the expensive models. Is it right to buy models with knowledge that they keep their value? Okay. I think
models keep their value over time.
Sure. There are certain...
Do you disagree?
There are certain... They are a depreciating asset. 95% of them.
Are they?
Yeah. If you buy a box of Space Marines today for $50, you cannot sell it for $50 in a year.
Okay.
You can sell it for $40 or $45.
How about a display model for Mineworks Games?
If they're still in production, no, you have to sell it for cheaper. If it's out of production, this is where you get into the tricky thing of out of production, right? And that's why Spira Mirabilis, Lucas Pina's sculpts, actually increase in value over time because there is a short window for which they are for sale. They are for sale for like 48 hours. He makes one run. The quality, the artisan craftsmanship are insane, and they are very limited. When he does a run and he does 500 are in existence, there will only ever be 500 in existence. Those will appreciate.
So you said when the Mindwork model is sold out, it won't increase in value, or it will, or
if it's out of production and they're not making it anymore, then it's possible it will. If the demand is high enough.
Right. I think the thing is that you just need to find the person who wants the thing that you're selling and they will pay the price for it. I don't think it's going to be 100% the same value as when you bought it, but I imagine it'd be like 80% for a display model.
I mean, to me, the whole conversation is silly because if the point of you spending $100 on a model is as an investment.
Yeah, don't do that.
Please, please just invest that $100 into something that will be an appreciating asset, whether it's a bond at 6% or something. Like, do something where you have at the very minimum, a guaranteed return, or money is turning into money, or bury it in your backyard, make it gold, and buy gold and bury it in your backyard like Ron Swanson.
Yes.
Now, there is some value in buying things that are beautiful or that have value to you or that you like and having it feel like it will retain its value or knowing that it will retain some percentage of its value or maybe even go up a bit that helps you justify the purchase, and that is perfectly okay, and that's not a bad decision to make.
Yeah, but yeah, don't do it as a primary function for investment.
Yeah.
That's not why... people do it. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there are some weird things like vintage Warhammer models and Spira Mirabilis models, but I think for the most part, probably not a good investment opportunity.
Yeah. But hey, especially if you think you might want to paint it one day, or you want to have it because you want to collect all of the every old metal orc model or something,
yeah,
then it's like, cool. Like, that's great. But that is you as a collector more than an investor.
Yes.
Like, that's the key word, is investing is a maybe not the correct term.
Yeah, people collect fucking stamps, okay? You can collect unpainted models. That's totally fine.
You hear that rumble? Rumble in the Bronx coming on over here?
No.
I just...
Oh, that's you?
Yeah.
Your asshole is the Bronx?
Yeah, in this scenario, my asshole is the Bronx.
Wonderful.
You're over there in Queens just smelling my sewage. Okay, you're up for the next question.
Mini hacks, ways to save money, time, and relationship while pursuing your mini painting passion. From Anonymous, I read a book, I know, shocker, surprise, called The Passion Paradox. And the whole thesis of that book is that you cannot do that. If you are passionate for something, things will languish. Your friendships,
your romantic relationships, your diet, your things, is because you are consumed by something. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe that's not exactly what you're asking, but if you are that kind of person, interesting book to read. But the question I think that's really being asked here is like, what's the balance here? How do you strike a balance? One way that I do it, and I've been hopping at home recently, I'm putting together my who's the big dragon lady thing,
Lukavai.
Yeah, Lukavai. I've been.
I like how that she's not a dragon at all, and I still know the answer to that.
She's got fucking wings, bro.
I mean, she looks more like a demon spawn.
She's like a dragon centaur.
Yeah, she's. I don't know what the fuck she's supposed to be.
I don't know. But I do it where I try to be efficient with the time. So me and my wife, I like to watch TV shows like a couple nights a week. And while we're doing that, I have placed my hobby desk immediately behind where the couch is, so that I can participate in watching the TV shows and talking about what's happening while also doing some easy hobbying. So I think that's a way how I've kind of still given like my wife time of day while also trying to find time to hobby on my personal stuff.
Yeah, that's a really good one. That's a smart life hack right there. Because
mm-hmm.
Let's be honest, a lot of us, I mean, myself guilty included, when I'm sitting and watching a TV show or a movie, especially if it's movies, is a little different. If it's, I haven't seen the movie before, like you find yourself like hovering to your phone and scrolling through bullshit or whatever. Hey, how about maybe you just build that unit of Terminators instead while you're doing that? And that's great. I think you touched on something that's really important because he or she said the word time. How do you save time with your passion? And those do not compute. If you're passionate about it, now you can think about how do I maximize my time? That's a key thing for passion. But how to minimize your time? Then you're not. Are you passionate?
Yeah. Are you trying to like? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And that comes back to balance because like I'm really passionate about this, but I only have so much time. It's like, well, find that balance. Do not neglect other parts of your life because you'll regret that at some point or another. Whether that's friendships, whether that's your family, your kids, your spouse, your health. There's a lot of things there. So finding that balance, or you know, maybe you just say. For me, a big thing is like, I don't really play video games anymore. I have to choose what my hobbies are, what my hobby time is used for. And for me, that means I need to make concessions, which one draws me more. And I need to be okay with that. Now and again, I'll start a new video game and quickly for me anyway, they fall off because of the draw to the painting and the hobbying is more important to me. And maybe that's my good indication that this is the where I need to get my satisfaction is from the hobbying side.
Yeah. If you're like me, don't sleep on small gains, you know? Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'm like, oh man, I can't invest 4 hours in this thing. There's no point in investing any time. Like invest that 30 minutes, invest that 1 hour. Like you will be surprised when it accumulates over the course of a month how much you accomplish.
Next question, also by Anonymous. Wow, Anonymous asking a lot of questions today. What gets you really excited to paint / buy in a miniature?
Classic question.
Classic. The
question is old as time.
I mean, it's a real personal one.
Yeah.
This is the history of you as a child, right? So for everything that has led you up to the version of you today has an influence on what you like, right? And what draws your eye, what makes you excited. For me, the buying thing is an interesting part of this question. Very little excites me to buy, other than kind of leading back to that other question of a level of collectability. I am more excited to buy something if I know I have a finite window for which to buy it.
Okay.
And then I'm like, yes. I haven't even thought about the painting part. That's not important right now. To own it, for it to be mine. That level of scarcity, and that's how they fucking get us, the scarcity, the flash sales bullshit and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I think for me, there's two things to think about. If I'm nostalgic for like something else that I enjoy and the model reminds me of that, that gets me excited. So like I bought a model called the Ghoul Queen. It's a bust and she reminds me so much of Bavmorda from Willow. And I fucking love Bavmorda, fucking evil witch queen, dude. I love her. And so I was like instant buy, like got it right away. The other thing that hypes me to do games is just like, to buy models is games. And so it's like, you got a buddy, you're like, okay, we're going to play this game
in a month. This is your faction. This is my faction. Like, we're gonna run through this scenario, or maybe a couple of scenarios that make a campaign. Okay, now I'm gonna start working on my army. I'm gonna try to make it a little bit special, put my spin on it. Like, that whole process in my brain gives me a creative boner. Like, so, and it's every single time I think about it for everything, you know? Like, I mentioned it a couple days ago, like, I would be so cool to do like a Dune RPG where, like, the room you're in is decorated it with like Dune paraphernalia. People were wearing like Dune outfits. There was music playing in the background that was like kind of like low key and like Dune like, and like there was cool things planned out for like events that happened in the, like, I love the prospect of coming together with friends and like creating a cool experience that's like unique. And so that gets me really hyped for like games. So those two things probably get me the most excited.
Yeah. That's a good answer. That's a good answer.
Thank you.
What's the next one, Scott?
The next one is, do you have a special mini? Wait, did we skip that one?
No, that's this. You're right. That's
okay,
the next one
that you keep putting off starting from Anon. Yeah, okay. John, what's the model you've been sitting on forever?
I mean, I have a lot of models that I've been sitting on forever, so I don't think I have a special one I've been putting off that just always lingers in the back of my head. I forget about most of them until I go back and see it again. I was like, oh, yeah. But recently when I did the video on the massive Tyranid kitbash that I did, and I kitbashed it and then shortly after painted it, I kind of came to this revelation that I think a lot of us deal with, is that the thing you're holding off on doing until you're better, the thing you're holding off on until you feel confident, or until you get the rest of the army done, you know, whether that be your Magnus, or that be your Gilliman, whether that be your Bellicor or your big baddie or whatever, do not hold off to paint it. Just don't. You will always be better at painting tomorrow than you are today. So if you go by that set of rules of until you're better or until you're good, you will never, once you get that in your mindset, you will never feel like you're good enough to paint it, and you will never paint it. So just paint it, and that process will be learning. It'll be fun, and guess what? You have this awesome model that you can use on the table. So I don't have anything in particular. I have a lot of models. I could never buy a model again for the rest of my life, and I've probably never run out. So I don't have a particular one, but no.
Yeah. My particular one is Drazhar. I started painting that model for a video. That was like, the concept was how long does it take to paint a competition model. I was logging the whole thing, and then I formatted the SD card and lost all the footage. And I was like, fuck this shit. I'm not touching this model ever again. But I want to touch it because it's painted really well. Mm-hmm. And it's totally, at the moment, like Golden Demon level quality, but it's like 70, like it's like 60% done. And so I'm sad I lost that footage. I know that I have so much more time to invest in the model, and also the diorama that I want to make for the model. And like, what's discouraging me is that thought that I mentioned earlier, like, I don't have the time to spend that thing deserves. So I'm just not gonna spend it at all, which is just like, again, I should just click away at it, you know, every now and then just do a little bit more. Because not doing anything obviously isn't getting me anywhere. And I do want to put something in the Golden Demon cases this year. That is an actual legitimate attempt. So that's the thing I've been putting off forever. It just sits on my desk staring at me, and I'm sad whenever I see it.
I think there's something healthy about you doing a totally different project from Golden Demon from start to finish.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, I think there might be too much weight in this one, or maybe too many built-in if, ands, or buts with it too.
Yeah, yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
It's certainly worthy, and you have a lot of really good work in a number of hours in it. So there's some understanding of value of time investment, but yeah, also there's some freedom in just being like, what's this new idea that excites me? And it doesn't always have to be like the most innovative thing. Like, I feel like I got too emotionally invested in what I wanted my vampire diorama to be, that there was no way it was going to live up to it. You know, unless I won the Slayer Sword, which obviously didn't happen. So
yeah, that'd be the ultimate validation, for
right?
Sure.
It's like anything short of that, you feel like, oh, I just, a bit of me is gone in that piece, and so
okay, yeah. That's,
sometimes
that,
just like,
that's interesting.
Paint a thing that just like, you feel like you can make it through the project, but it doesn't need to be the most awe-inspiring, unique idea ever. It just paints something real well.
That's true. Yeah. I also like, I did that Golden Demon interview that we'll never see the light of day. And what really discouraged me was what Aiden said about
an ultramarine painted yellow, it doesn't matter if it's amazing. It will never fucking win because it's not about the lore. And so I painted Drazhar in a fucking bizarro scheme. And I have converted it a little bit to make it not look like Drazhar. But I'm afraid that people are going to be like, that's Drazhar. You painted him in fucking white and red and lilac. This is not the scheme. Like, you're out of here.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're hard truth here, I wouldn't put the extra hours you need to do to finish that, to do it for Golden Demon for that exact reason. I don't think, now you could do it and you could enter it in at Nova or Gen Con or at a different future competition that's open and you wouldn't have that issue because it would look strictly at the quality of the paint. There would be no worse feeling than you'd know. The second you put that in the case, you would be worried that would be the reason the whole time.
What about like if I did like a head swap and like a weapon swap? And like he has a bunch of gems on his chest. I removed all of those and I filled in the chest plate so they're nice and smooth. So I've done some conversion and it's just the pose that's like so obvious.
Yeah. If you did weapon, at least one of the weapons ahead and you don't put him on that very iconic face that he's on.
No.
I think then you could do it.
Okay.
Because then it doesn't feel like him.
Yeah. That is the problem, right? And I will think about that. And yeah.
Okay. Next question. This is by Artu Maki. Pet projects. We all know Scott has his wood elves and John doesn't dead stuff. But I want to hear you ramble about why you love them / do them the way you do.
Do them the way you do. Okay.
Similar to another question about what excites you about painting a miniature.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, why do you like what you like, Scott?
I like wood elves because they have this anti-hero vibe, and I really like anti-heroes. My favorite comic book character is Morbius. I like characters who are self-interested unashamedly, and wood elves absolutely are. They care about one thing, like their relationship and like the quality of like the forest, essentially. And like anything that gets in the way of that, whether you're human, whether you're beastman, whether you're whatever, you're fucking dying. It doesn't matter. And so I love that about wood elves.
Does this come from Lord of the Rings? Like, is that a formative part of your youth? Was when the original Lord of the Rings came out, and they're very aloof. Their passions or their directives are their own, and they could give a fuck about the world of man as long as it lined up with the thing.
Maybe. It's hard to say because I did play Wood Elves when I was like 12 years old, but I'm pretty sure the Lord of the Rings movies were already out at that point because I'm pretty sure GW was making games based on the movies already.
Mm-hmm.
So it definitely could have been that. But yeah, they just seem so cool how little they care about everything other than this one singular thing.
And I suppose vampires are kind of that, but bad guys.
Yeah. And just total self-interest. And like, I just love that the vampire hubris, like the actual story for how vampires were created, which I actually didn't know, was that, according to Vince, Neferata stole the elixir of life from Nagash and fed it to herself and other people. And it went awry and they were cursed with unlife where they had to drink blood. And like
that's sweet curse.
That's such a vampire thing, right? It's like, oh, ultimate power, fuck yeah. Oh shit, I got fucked, but I'm gonna live with it. Like that's such a vampire thing. I love that so much about them.
Yeah, it's really a feel good story in the end. Mine is typically just from as a kid. I loved all bad guys. Like I loved Shredder. Shredder was the coolest thing in Ninja Turtles.
Yeah.
Skeletor was the coolest thing in He-Man. Mum-Ra was the coolest thing in Thundercats.
Cobra Commander was the coolest thing. Fuck G.I. Joe.
Yeah, dude. Fucking Darth Vader, obviously the best part of Star Wars.
100%.
As a kid, I was just drawn to all the evil, deep bad guys.
And I know, yeah. Why, though? Are we messed up?
I remember as a little kid, I actually watched, before I ever watched the Star Wars movies as a little kid, I'd probably seen Spaceballs like 10 times. And
you like the bad aliens?
Yeah, dude. Rick Moranis is the ultimate bad guy is what we learned. in that movie, and I can still picture the scene to this day, Darth Helmet says to Lone Star, he says, "Evil will always win over good because good is dumb." And it's like, that's fucking it, dude. these fucking derpy looking, you know, white dudes that are all the good guys, and they kind of like, I'm gonna tell a funny joke and we're gonna get away with the girl. I'm like, nah, I want that big bad motherfucker that's just gonna kill everybody.
Yeah,
that's who I want. And so that's, you know, I guess that's just me to this day. And maybe that's why I influence my opponents in Age of Sigmar to make them make mistakes. And I laugh maniacally under my breath.
Yeah.
Just an evil person, I guess. So.
It's funny you mentioned a movie scene in a quote that you remember. Because I also have a movie scene in a quote that I remember that was like, man, bad guys are so cool. And it's the villain from Knight's Tale. It's the first time that's a movie about jousting, mm-hmm. and he knocks off the main protagonist off of his horse for the first time in the movie, like maybe like midway through the movie, and he walks up to him and he stares down at him on the ground, and the shot is the camera is on the ground pointed straight up at this guy, so it gives you this real power dynamic feeling, mm-hmm. and he walks up to him and he's like, "You have been weighed, you have been measured, and you've been found wanting."
Yeah.
It's like, you are not enough. Basically, medieval, get good. And I was just like, ah, I love bad guys.
Yeah.
From that moment on, I couldn't help myself.
Yeah, yeah. Any movie, and that's kind of honestly, I mean, hot take here. The original Conan movie, I love it. I still love it. It's not as good as I want it to be.
What? Really? I think Thulsa Doom is fucking amazing.
Oh, no, he's a big fat chump.
He turns into a dragon demon thing, though, dude.
He turns into a weird looking snake man, and then just gets fucking rocked.
Yeah, that
immediately gets his head cut off.
That is true. That it was kind of like, yeah.
Bro, you got the powers to turn snakes into arrows and shoot them at people, and you can turn into a giant snake man, and the guy just walks up the stairs and cuts your head off, and you're like, bah, 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 bah.
Yeah.
That's the only thing about that movie that gets me. Like the lead up and like
the lead up is so good. Like the opening scene where like the three guys, like Thulsa and his two people, are like just kind of standing there and like they fucking just kill his mom, and it's just like, oh my god, like just so brutal, so ruthless.
Yeah,
yeah, it's kind of lame. Yeah.
Good question. I guess we got down deep into our psyche in that
did.
One.
We did. All right, what's the next one?
Scott, you're reading the next question by Walter.
All right, Walter, is using weathering pencils to highlight or create effects cheating? John.
No.
All right. Next question.
There is no cheating.
Yeah.
There is no cheating. Airbrushing, not cheating. Using pencils, not cheating. Using Sharpie markers, not cheating.
Commissioning paint jobs, not cheating.
Yeah.
Unless you're like entering it in competition and saying you did it. That's cheating. Yeah.
Like lying is cheating, kind of.
Is lying cheating, John?
Lying is just lying.
Okay. Well, what about if you're using lying to like convince
if
your
I'm,
opponents?
If I'm using lying to cover my cheating. Then yes, it's cheating. But no, that whatever you find that helps you, because the first time you use weathering pencils, guess what? They're not going to look that good.
Yeah, you're going to probably suck.
You have to become proficient with and to be able to take full advantage of the tool. And that therein lies you becoming more better at your hobby, whatever way you approach doing that. So don't feel bad about doing anything, because if someone painted the most perfect eyeball with a Sharpie and somebody painted the most perfect eyeball with a paintbrush, well, they're both the most perfect eyeball. Which one is easier for you, or which one can you more consistently pull off? That's the one you should probably use.
Yeah. Best tool for the job.
Next question. This comes to us from Ravis. What is more important, painting the models or getting the game time in with quick effects? It's like a personal question. Scott, which one's more important?
I think you just nailed it. It's a personal question. It depends. Like, I am really milking this last unit for my Age of Sigmar army. I'm making sure I got the right resin. I'm making sure I got the heads that like align with whatever my backstory is. Like, because I get joy out of that. And then when I see them all together, it makes me feel good. But if most of your hobby joy is in playing the game, then obviously you should try to paint quickly so you can get to that enjoyable part. We're all trying to create the experience that we find the most joy in, and that requires some amount of like self-analysis.
Yeah. I will mirror that. I will say lean into your muse, because the muse may change. So
that's true too. Like be okay with change, right?
And I think that's a really important part of it, is being open-minded and not judgmental to others that appreciate or are more driven by other parts of the hobby. Because if you're open-minded to it, the muse may change where now you're really excited to really have a unique paint scheme for this Warcry Warbrand. Instead of, I already have two Warbrands, I painted them up quick, and I really love playing the game. Now, in my free time, I'm going to try to make this cool custom Warband. And just lean into that, too, because the more flexible you are in different parts of the hobby, the more healthy it will be long-term for you to stay involved in the hobby, because you're not so rigid in what you like and what you don't like.
Indeed. Okay, the next question comes from Naomi. Do you think there are types... Oh, interesting. I didn't notice that part. Types of miniatures missing. Oh, I guess... Okay, never mind. Or in need or more representation on the market. Example, Star Trek busts, anime-inspired miniatures, etc. Okay, I thought when I read the word type, it was like, you know, like a bust is a type of a model, or like a full figure is a type. And I was like, oh, are there other types that we want more of? Maybe like just like... Just a head. Like, no shoulders, no neck, just a head. Is that interesting? I don't know.
No nose. Really? No ears, just a head.
Yeah. Yes. That's what I meant.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, this is a great question. It's like, what other IPs are you hyped for that you want to see a miniature for?
Well, I think this has changed a lot in the last couple of years with how many options are out there for 3D printing and 3D sculpts and 3D mm-hmm. designs, because mm-hmm. A lot of people give zero fucks about IPs and just printing whatever they want. And so if you can dig deep enough and you can, you know, scour the internet, I think by and large you can find a lot of stuff. That requires a good bit of work, because there's no central repository where we can just go in Google and it will show us everything that's ever been made in miniature. It can feel tough. That doesn't mean like this, you know, this version of the Ninja Turtles is the ones that I was hoping would be made that I could paint. You may not find all of the variability, but there are also a bunch of very, very talented sculptors out there that you could commission for someone to sculpt the thing if you really want to see it in the world and you're willing to pay for it.
Yeah. I want to see... So the other thing is that if you want a collection of miniatures, it's difficult to find ones that like match an aesthetic. So like I want to find a bunch of Dune models. And I found a bunch of people who make Dune models, but they're from like four different STL makers. I'm not sure if the scale is going to work. I'm not sure if the design language is going to work when I print them and put them together. So yeah. Finding a collection of models that all match also is difficult. But to answer the question, I feel like while there are models that have been described as Warcraft style, where the fuck's my Arthas, where's my Arthas? Where's my Uther Pendragon? Like, where are my like Warcraft Sylvanas Windrunner characters, you know? Like, there is that game. There's that Pandemic Legacy game. But those models suck.
Yes.
Like, so where are the real good Warcraft models?
Yeah, they laid off that whole team, so I don't feel bad about saying that.
Oh, right. Yeah, I forgot. Yeah. They did.
Oh, I'm sure that they're out there. But you can't probably search Sylvanas Windrunner to find them because they don't have the IP. So.
That's the other thing that's hard about it, is you can't use those terms to find the exact thing you want.
You need to find the right Reddit thread where someone asked the question and the other people linked it, because you're not going to be able to find it on your own. That's the whole other can of worms. Now, that's one side of the question. The other side that I was thinking about is like, is there certain ones that maybe Naomi's asking us personally?
Yeah.
There's things that we want.
Morbius.
Jesus Christ.
There's no Morbius miniature. Dude. MCP is a fucking game, and there's no more. There was a movie. Where the fuck's Morbius?
Dude, you know, the crazy thing, why are you so much about Morbius? He's not even the coolest vampire in the Marvel Universe.
Oh, sorry. I'm not very comic book versed. And I guess I kind of knew there were more vampires, but I never really thought about it. What are the other vampires called?
So when I was a kid, the very first comic book that I got into, very first one, from Marvel anyway. I was a big Image guy.
But, you were an Image guy when you were a kid?
Image Comics.
Was that a... Really? Okay.
Yeah. And Spawn.
You were a hipster when you were...
Yeah. Because they had the badass ones. They had like... You know, back then, Marvel was PG, like PG-13 at tops. DC was PG. But Image was rated R. Right. So it was like, yeah, there's some blood and, you know, ripping out spines and shit. And it's like, fuck yeah, I'm 10 years old. This is a bit of me. And first ones I got into was the Night Stalkers.
Okay. So that, they're part of the Midnight Suns, right?
Yes.
They're vampires? No, they're creatures.
No. One of them is a vampire.
Oh, okay.
And he is. And then Blade is also in and out of.
Of course. Blade is a vampire. Yes.
He's also in the Night Stalkers. But and then there's the third guy that's not a vampire. But they are vampire hunters that happen to be vampires.
Yes.
And they get a little tussle with Morbius
mm-hmm.
at times, too.
Mm-hmm.
Because Morbius is a lot more, I don't know, evil.
He's not evil.
He does evil things.
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, but. Okay, so Morbius, that's a good one. That's not a bad one. I was about a fucking Nightcrawler, bro. Although Gambit was my jam.
There is a Gambit mini that is pretty damn good.
I know, that MCP one is pretty sweet.
I have it, yeah, because I have a buddy who loves Gambit, and I want to paint it for him. But I just did a little search for Morbius on my mini factory, and this is what I pulled up.
What the fuck is that?
I'm sorry to whoever sculpted this, but this is not a good model. This is not...
It looks like it tried to emulate the ones from those Kickstarters, the Seamon Kickstarters, where they're like the chibi ones.
Kind of. Yeah, with like a bigger head, yeah.
Because he kind of looks like that style.
Yeah, I was just curious if this thing exists, and not so much.
All right, I got mine.
What is it?
Fucking Castlevania. But.
Yeah, bro. Holy shit, dude.
Yeah, I want Dracula from Castlevania. Now, that's a fucking Dracula.
Yeah, Alucard, fucking Trevor Belmont.
Yeah, I want the whole Belmont clan. Yeah, I want.
I honestly, fuck the Belmonts. I want just the vampires.
Yeah, dude. But like in terms of like badass good guys, they got that art style down, and the design of the good guys pretty fucking good. So
that is a great answer. I totally agree. I want Castlevania.
Even like the final, like I'm a big fan of the Final Fantasy art style, like the Final Fantasy 14. Like I tried to play the MMO and I can't do it because it's MMOs for babies. but the art style is so gorgeous, and their character design is so gorgeous. The world crafting is beautiful. Their architecture in that game is phenomenal. I would love that, and that's probably out there. I'm sure it's a massive game with a really rabid fan base. I'm sure there's some crossover, some cool fantasy stuff. So
yeah,
that yeah. But Castlevania, final answer.
What about Rando Sando? Like
Name of the Wind?
Not Name of the Wind.
Stormlight Chronicles.
Stormlight Chronicles. I know you didn't like the ones that came out on that Kickstarter, but would you want ones that did capture the book?
If they did it right, not this derpy bullshit that they came out with that looks like ass. I would love those characters. Man, there's some badass characters, and he does such a great job of painting a picture in words of what they look like and what the shard armor and the shard blades.
I love everyone has the unique shard play. That's
yeah,
cool.
And how Kaladin's change. You have different versions of Kaladin. You have like Bridge Boy Kaladin, where he's a slave, and you can have him when he becomes in the military. He's got a uniform. Then you get a fucking Light of a Thousand Suns Kaladin. Like that, man, this is so fucking great, dude. Yeah,
that's cool.
Okay, so yeah, that would be great too. So. You know,
yeah,
okay.
No.
That's a good question. It's a good question. Now I'm thinking of all these different things I want.
I know it's a fun question. All right, next question. I think it's for you to read.
Okay, this is by Garrick Smith. How did you get into competition painting? Also, when did you know you're ready for competition?
You're ready right now, Garrick.
You're ready, Garrick. That's the answer. You're ready. For me, the very first model I painted was for a competition for a store. So I went into painting miniatures with a competitive mindset. I wanted to learn to get as best I could to beat other people or to compete or to have people say I was good or to get feedback from good painters. And even locally, there's a great painter locally. Shout out to Dustin that like when I was first started painting and learned from him and with the desire to try to grow. So I think that's how I got into it. And then when we, you know, decided I was going to go to Adepticon with you, I'm like, well, they have competition there. This is big boy competition. So then I was just like, I was hungry for it. And I was like, I'm just going to push myself. And pushing yourself is kind of the name of the game for competition painting. It just makes you better because you're pushing yourself.
Yeah. I think I knew when I don't know. I didn't even go to Adepticon one time. Maybe I did. Maybe I went to Adepticon one time and I saw Crystal Brush and I was like, I have to do this. And then next year, 2017, I brought my first entry. And then every year after that, I brought something to enter into Crystal Brush.
So I think I knew it when I saw the case and all of that. And also, we're both competitive people. And so yeah. The idea of I get to do this nerdy art thing while also competing, it's like, it's just, again, just combining more things that we enjoy. So I think, when I first saw the cases at Crystal Brush is when I really knew I wanted to do it.
Yeah. And I don't think you have to necessarily be a highly competitive person to feel like the competition painting is right for you, or that you should do it, or you should feel like, oh, I'm not really that way, so that's not going to be my thing. I think there's a lot of really interesting things you can learn about yourself and you can get out of it, not even from the competitive side. It's also very overwhelming when you see the pictures of the Golden Demon online, or if you go to a competition and you see them in person, and you see all these other stuff on Instagram of stuff at Monte Sansovino, all these things, because like there's no way I could paint like that. That is so incredible. I don't even know where to begin. And that is okay because everybody started there. But if you don't begin, you never know how far you could go. And so that's just part of it. The first step is the hardest. So just saying, I'm going to try my hardest on this. That's all I'm going to do. And you'll enjoy it and you'll be proud that you have something in the case. So do it.
I would advise, if you are a painter and you know you're not really interested in competition painting, to try it at least one time. Just because you're going to discover things about the process that are different from what you normally do. Like, some people say they spend hundreds of hours painting competition models. So the first question that you should ask is, what the fuck do you do with all that time? And like, you will figure out. You're going to like, I'm going to sit down with this model. I'm going to spend a lot of time. And like, what's going to happen is what's going to happen. And you might discover new techniques that are more valuable to you now that you've expanded your window for painting. You might like discover all these new things about the hobby just because you're trying something from a different angle. Different motivations. So just try it out one time and just see what you learn.
Yeah.
All right. I love this name, Sawdust Enema.
Oh boy.
recent mistakes that you have made that have ultimately improved your painting. This is going to require some thinking here.
All right, we're back from a pee break, pee time, pee pee. I'm buying time, trying to remember. Okay, Garrick.
Not Garrick.
Sawdust Enema. How could I forget? Recent mistake that ultimately improved my painting. Well, here's one that I recently mistake that I made that I hope ultimately improves my painting. Is I thought for competition painting specifically, or you know, try hard in painting for something, that I needed to have it all figured out before I began, and then I just executed. And so I need to have everything planned out, and then I just do the thing. And I made mistakes in kind of just like putting on blinders and doing the thing. Instead of being open to seeing as you're creating something, because you are kind of creating something out of nothing, and being flexible and open to making changes as you go. Could be in composition of your piece. Could be in the way the colors work together. As they were definitely going to have a crimson cloak, and they were definitely going to have, you know, a blue armor or whatever. I mean, and based on how everything is working out, you have to be willing to adapt. So I found that having a foundation, a vision, is important. You can't start from nothing, so you need to have some drive and some picture in your head. But then being willing to adapt, being willing to get input from other people, and not being stuck into this thing and not realizing it's not what you want it to be until it's kind of, I don't want to say too late, but until you've gone way further than you should have before you should have been analyzing.
Okay. So what was the mistake in that process? Just that you put too much weight in the planning process and not enough in like the ability to be fluid?
Yeah. I mean, specifically, I mean, I've done this a number of times recently, but I'm looking specifically at my diorama for Golden Demon, in that I thought I had it all figured out and I just needed to execute on the quality of the paint. And in hindsight, that is mostly a composition thing. I just don't feel like it was as strong. The painting was not the issue. It's that I wasn't willing to reformulate, relook at it, pick it up in three dimensions, and feel that it was as dramatic or as giving as I wanted it to be.
Yeah.
And just thinking if I just plowed over, my initial vision would see me through, and that can be brought down to, you know, just painting your squad for your army or your paint scheme for your army or whatever. Like, I still think it applies. Have a vision, but don't be, you know, completely tied to it forever.
Yeah, that makes sense. When we were at Vince's house most recently, I painted a singular Blood Knight, and I did not like the scheme. And I was like, fuck, what am I going to do? I'm going to repaint this model? And then I had a little bit of a think. I was like, okay, how do I do this? And I was like, what if I paint every knight differently, like questing knights? They all basically, you'll have like a king, like, request people for war, and every town will send like a soldier, and that soldier will be wearing the heraldry of wherever they came from, and they come together and they're all different looking. And so instead of like leaning into a scheme I don't like, that mistake, air quotes, allows me to have, I thought was kind of a fun idea for a Union of Blood Knights, where like every knight has a similar-ish scheme in that they're using blue, sickly green, a red and like cream white, but just distributed differently around the model, and so they all feel different, but they feel like they belong. But like the point of the scheme, oh, sorry, of the unit is to look different. So I took that mistake and I turned it into what I think is going to be a cool looking unit whenever I get around to painting those models.
Good answer.
Thank you.
Good answer. All right, we got one more here today by Scuba Steve. Scuba Steve, what is your favorite color? What is the best way you have found to ship miniatures / commission jobs you have done? Whoa, how to ship?
what a question to end on.
Pull and pray.
I think it depends on the model, right? And the size of the model.
If it's 3D printed resin, good fucking luck.
Yeah. I mean, I will take the model and I'll put it in the corner of a square sheet of like big bubble wrap, and I'll just roll and I'll roll and I'll roll and I'll create like, and I'll fold the sides in and I'll keep rolling, like almost like a sub sandwich, right?
Yeah.
And I'll create like this 32mm model is now 4 inches in diameter and 8 inches long sub sandwich. And then I'll put that inside of a box, and I'll obviously tape the thing shut, and I'll put it in a box with other void fill. And that normally works fine for me.
Yeah. When I did my, I'm trying to think some ones I did, when I painted that entire Adeptus Mechanicus army.
Yeah, dude, what'd you do for that, dude?
Basically what you just said.
Okay.
So I would, actually to help, when I had a bunch of them, so I'd, you know, there was so many fucking little models. What I would do is I'd take a long sheet of bubble wrap and I'd space out a whole bunch of models on one side. And then I took a stapler and I'd staple the sections between them. So it would create like little pockets for each one. And then I'd roll and I'd roll and I'd roll. And then you just kind of end up being able to fold them in on each other. And so it kind of made this big cube, and then I'd wrap that whole thing in bubble wrap.
Huh.
And the problem was like after that whole force was something like, I don't remember how it was, somewhere between 70-ish models. Like the size of the box that it needed to fit all those in was huge.
Yeah.
I think by and large, bubble wrap is your best bet. If you adhere it to something sturdy and stable, let's say like you make like a cage, right? And you have it drilled to the bottom and it's held in there.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's like it's free floating, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a problem there because you have one side that it's completely rigid to. And so if that box gets dropped, something is going to give, right? So that the shaking is going to keep rising up the model until it finds a weak point. If that weak point is weak enough, it will snap there.
Yeah.
So you almost are, you're trying to, you know, trying to totally encapsulate it like an egg.
Yeah.
And that helps with the any damage that would be from just being dropped or something smashed on it or whatever in transit.
Yeah. I've seen some people, like if, like say you have like a model holding a sword out and like that wrist is like a weak point that could break and there's like stuff under it, they'll like put like foam or pluck foam like in that area to support that part from that exact problem.
Yeah.
But then, like, you're relying on people to, like, remove that stuff without, like, snapping, like, the pommel of this, like, pointy sword off or, like, whatever it is, right? So I don't know if it's a great solution, but that's an idea if you do need it.
By and large, your best bet is use plastic models because those will travel so much easier than a resin model. Like, a resin bust, by and large, is not a lot of bunch of little tiny bits and pokey parts. You can usually get that pretty good, but resin's more brittle than plastic by a lot. And then 3D printed resin is even a scarier thing. Like I don't know if I've ever seen one make it 100% along the way.
Yeah, I don't know either. I painted that. Oh my God. What's the big bad wood elf called? I'm losing my mind right now. Orion, King in the Woods. I painted that big diorama. I put a tree on it, a couple wolves on there. And I think I just did that sub sandwich method. And I'm pretty sure, I mean, I know it worked because the guy sold it on eBay.
And it looked great in the eBay
pictures. The pictures look fine in eBay, yeah.
Oh, dude. Did he put your name as you painted it in the eBay thing?
And he put a screenshot of our Discord conversation planning the commission in the eBay listing as well. And the video link as well.
Did he ask
no
more than what you charge for it?
Oh, I can't remember. I think it was very similar.
Okay.
Maybe a little bit more, maybe a little bit less, but very close.
Okay. And then that's fine.
I don't care. It's his property. He can do whatever he wants with it.
Yeah, he can run it over with his fucking lawnmower. I don't care.
Don't do that. But yeah, you could if you wanted to.
Yeah, or do it. If you're a true agent of chaos, that's what you do.
Okay. This is what he does in AOS games right here. Don't listen to this silver tongue, man. Those are all the questions. Thank you so much for giving them all. John already mentioned the podcast before, so I won't mention it again, but just thank you for the compelling questions that aren't necessarily good for a whole topic, but are still valuable questions and worthy of answers.
Yeah, we love it. And thank you, patrons, right? It's because of you that the ship is still afloat. Mm. And thank you for your questions, your interactions, and most importantly, your money. no, thank you everybody for watching.
Welcome to the after party. Let's get into it.
Let's do the thing.
I did the thing that, no, this it's the news.
Oh.
Dude, what is wrong with me?
No, this is right. Oh, you're right.
We didn't do the news yet.
Guys, we just accidentally went to the after party. We went in there. We realized that the after party.
We opened the door.
Yeah, and there was still like the regular lights on. There was no disco, no black lights. So,
yeah, immediately
no champagne service. So where we left, we're going to come back later to the after party, and maybe it won't smell like ass in that room. And we're going to talk about the newsy news.
Yes. Kirill Kanaev, debatably the greatest mini painter in the world at the moment. Teamed up with Liber De Monica to create a bust that I do not like. But it's still cool that Kirill is making models. I'm interested in why he teamed up with someone, because he himself is a very accomplished sculptor, and I don't think he needs the help. It's interesting that he made it, but what's cooler is his paint job of the bust. You should check that out if you are able to.
This model is ugly as fuck.
Yeah. It's weird. I don't know, with the weird pill-shaped arms and the bazillions of tiny spikes on his face, and like, I don't know. It's fine, but it's not speaking to me.
It's all personal preference. I'm sure some people will love it. He's like giant nipples. I don't know what those are. Are those supposed to be like landmines he's strapped to his chest? Are they some kind of like an exhaust vent? Or they just so his nipples don't chafe? I don't really know.
Titty exhaust, bro.
He's got axe in one hand and a rifle that you should not be using with one hand in the other hand.
He's got, wait, that's not axe. I thought you meant like, you made the sound like, I thought you were talking about axe body spray.
he's got it. I'm dual wielding axe body spray in the far future.
Oh my God, he's just spraying it in people's fucking eyes.
Get out of here. Dude, if that cocaine bear comes at you, you got to axe body spray him in the face.
this MCP thing is interesting. This didn't make any sense to me, but AMG is making a new starter set for MCP, but it comes with all the same heroes and villains that were in the first starter set, but they're like reposed. And so this was interesting, because I was like, okay, when GW makes a new starter set, they just make new models and they like advance some storyline and they put it out there and they just sculpt new shit. And now this is actually really interesting, where it's like, you can't really do that with MCP. Like, you could put different heroes in the box, and I don't know why they didn't do that. Maybe because they want all the biggest and baddest and most recognizable heroes in the starter set.
Right.
But doesn't it feel weird, though, just to kind of like re-sculpt and repose the models and make a new starter set?
Yeah. I mean, this reminds me of stuff with video games, as well as a card games that deal with a comic book stuff. And what they come into this pretty quickly, where it's like you have a finite number and of the heroes that are well known. And you can go into the B class of heroes and stuff, but you kind of got to lean heavy into your tried and trues. So what they end up doing, which I'm sure they will do in this game, is they come up with different versions of the character. So they'll be Spider-Man, but then they'll also be like Miles Morales Spider-Man, or they'll be like Black Spider-Man, you know, he's in the black outfit, or there's, so you make other versions. And so you have like Captain America, you have like Captain America with boots. I don't know. he's just wearing Uggs. and then they'll have different stat blocks. They'll have their own different abilities and everything in game. So it's still the same character, but there's four different versions of Iron Man eventually. Why they didn't do that? If they're going to re-sculpt it.
I think they didn't do that because like those aren't recognizable by a large audience, like the variant versions of superheroes.
Oftentimes they basically looked the same though.
Yeah, probably.
They changed a bit, and it gives more diversity within the game of which version of Captain America you're using. But
yeah,
very interesting, very interessante.
Like a lot of, so this isn't totally without merit because some of the Miles in the previous set had not terrible, but bad poses. Spider-Man specifically was really, really criticized by the community, and the new Spider-Man is really good. So there is some good in this too. It's just strange that it's like almost all the same characters, I think.
I think it's, well, I mean, they fucking do this all the time with Warhammer. How many Space Marine captains are there?
There's a lot, but at least they're different. I mean, they're not.
It's a different pose.
Yeah, but they got different gobbledygook on them and stuff, don't they?
The same dude.
Maybe it's more the same than I am giving it credit.
Yeah, it's not as much there, but I like the idea of like, oh yeah, I really like, you know, I want to play Venom. Oh, there's a couple different versions of Venom, which is my favorite. And then I track down that model and paint that one. Like,
sure.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I agree with you that it's kind of weird from a starter set perspective if you're looking to move the most units,
yeah,
most boxes, that you want to hit people that already own your game.
Mm-hmm.
And this feels maybe not quite enough of a push for those people to buy it if it's characters they already have. Mm-hmm. But if it was different new characters, they would.
Yeah.
So anyway. Next one, Monument Hobbies have released their next series in the Artist Signature Series Procryl Paints, which is by Ben Comets and Matt Sexwish. Sex Comet themselves.
Well, we didn't wear our hats, bro.
Oh, we didn't wear our Sex Comets hats for this. so they have lines. I'll say I did get them. I haven't messed with them yet, but there's a couple interesting things about their lines. First of all, a number of their paints are satin. And when I say satin, I do not mean glossy. I mean they're more along the gloss level of like your average Vallejo paint Games Workshop paints.
Okay,
where they're not, you know, ultra matte,
ultra,
because pro acryls are quite matte, and so there's some that are that way. They also have a warm white, and I think might be a titanium white, or it might just be a cool white, that are heavy body.
Okay. So they're thicker.
Yeah, heavy body ones.
I wonder how well that works in that spiral cap that they have for a monument.
Good question. I will report back.
Okay.
I try them out. But
okay.
You know, sometimes you need that heavy body.
Yeah, you do.
You know,
you need a thick one.
Yeah, you need that thick booty.
Booty. All right, we got Creature Caster partnering with Cephalopod Studios to make a new paint collection called Some Like It Hot. It's got 16 paints and is formulated for the sketch and glaze technique. Interesting.
Yeah, Cephalopod. So I had their full regular line, and they're very similar to Reaper paints in that they're thin. They're like pre-thinned. And a lot of them struggle with just like, you know, single base coat coverage or even two or three things, but they're really good in a glazing technique or over white primer. But they're coming out with these other different like things. I know they either are working on or are just releasing like a baseline too that have higher coverage and stuff. So it's interesting as they've joined forces with Creature Caster, how they're approaching the painting game in more ways, and maybe having the support or income or whatever they can pump into it from Creature Caster to bring more stuff to their paint range.
Okay. Very cool.
Let's see here. Okay, so this is kind of an adjacent thing, but I don't think it's too far removed from our hobby. So we'll talk about it, and I may dip further into it in the future. Wizards of the Coast was accused of using AI art in official D&D books. Officially, specifically their next big release called Bigby Presents Glory of the Giants. And this kind of became a big thing. They kind of stirred up on Reddit and then ended up being picked up by the Washington Post. There was official kind of news article on there, and it spread out there that D&D Beyond was using AI-generated art in their products, and they kind of claimed that they did not realize that that's what it was, and that they made an official statement that going forward, they're not going to relook at how they evaluate and bring on art pieces that come in, that this won't happen again. Kind of covering their ass on that, and maybe it was an honest mistake, but either way, you're just slipping further and further into the fact that art as we know it is just going to be going the way of being copied by robots.
Robots. Yeah, and honestly, when I first saw the image, I was like, this seems fine. And then I read the Reddit thread, and it was like, look at these seven things. And I was like, oh, right, yeah, his feet are fucked. He has, like, 17 fingers. And, like,
yeah, I always look at the fingers, bro.
Yeah. And there was, like, so many other things, and it was so obvious once I looked at all of them that it was an AI-generated thing. But, yeah, not a big deal. They're like, whoops, we won't do it anymore.
Dude, they just need to hire a finger looker.
A finger looker, that's what
all
you
right,
need.
All right, James, your new job here at Wizards of the Coast is finger looker. You're going to look at 700 pictures a day, and you just need to look at the fingers.
Just got to figure it out.
Yeah, you have a pile over here, normal fingers. Pile over here, suspect fingers, okay?
Just art printed out. He like puts it in like stacks. Like that's all he does all day long.
It's just an empty desk with two baskets. And there's just one comically high pile of papers in this basket and one that has not very many. And that's a suspect finger bucket right there.
Wonderful, wonderful. All right. GW delays Legion Imperialis. All right. That's the small one, right?
Yeah, it's little boys.
Yeah, and actually because of that, Mantic also delayed Warpath, which is their epic war scale thing, because they didn't want to compete with G-dubs. I don't think they delayed it because GW delayed. Mantic delayed because Imperialis was coming out. Mm. And they're like, we don't want to compete with that. We want to like give our range some time to breathe and not compete against GW with
like, now they should do it and like now they should come back and be like
strike right now, Mantic.
Right. Yeah, dude. End of August, early September, and now is where you get people are already hyped about it and you're like, we got one better.
Shayna Baszler won the WWE SummerSlam after choking out Ronda Rousey wearing a black Legion top. She absolutely was. She had the Eye of Horus on her back, and then yeah, she's got other 40K centric wrestling outfits that she wears. It's incredible. I didn't know Ronda Rousey was in WWE. Wasn't she like a legit MMA fighter?
Yeah, she was until she got her face exploded enough times that she's like, oh, I better not keep doing this. But yeah, she's got a big personality and she moved way over there and probably makes more money in WWE than she did fighting. So
okay.
So yeah, not that I am a big WWE watcher, but I was aware of that as I am enough of a UFC watcher.
Okay.
Let's talk a little bit about our friend here in the news segment, Darren Latham. I believe that is the official the British pronunciation of his last name. Latham.
I agree.
He started a little challenge. Little challenge on his little Instagram channel. He's got a couple of followers on Instagram. Yeah. Darren, good for you.
Maybe like
good for you.
40,000, 50,000.
Something like that. Just a couple of people.
Just a little one.
And he started this 90s Marine challenge, right? And this is going through the beginning of September. So you can check out Darren Latham's Instagram. We'll put a link down to that down below as well in the show notes for our audio listeners. And the challenge is fairly simple. You find an old fucking shitty looking Space Marine model.
From the 90s.
From the 90s.
Let's go the 90s Marine Challenge.
Tell me I'm wrong. Tell me you're wrong with my description.
It's all nostalgia, baby. That's the only reason people are painting these models.
Yeah. I mean, that's not my thing. I didn't even know armor existed when I was a kid. So that's just, I don't have that nostalgia, but I'm sure for people in Britain that didn't have any other cool toys, this is what they grew up with. And so you paint it, but was there any rules on like how you paint it?
I think the only rule is that you got to paint the specific sculpt.
Yeah, this very like so it's got to be hard to track them down.
It kind of is. I know Ollie from Broadsword Wargaming was like, if you need help finding these Marines, I have them on Sprue. Let me know. And in fact, I have a couple as well on Sprue in my cabinet over there. I have like six or seven.
Are you going to do it?
No, I'm done paying Marines, bro.
Oh,
I was serious. Okay, that title was not clickbait lying. I am done painting Marines.
Okay, yeah, but one day, here's the thing.
No.
Hear me out. What if you had a video that was titled, it can be in the far future, could be next week, I don't give a shit. The title of the video is, I lied. And then it's just you with the Space Marine as the thumbnail. Tell me that's not a fucking tits video, dude.
I like that I've given my brain the rest. It's like, okay, I'm done. I don't got to think about it anymore.
I think the issue was the weight of having a series on it. Like,
that's true.
I'm not a massive fan of just like loving painting Space Marines, but like I enjoy it when I do it because they're very unique shapes and cool looking dudes. The Primaris dudes, I'm not gonna lie, they're fucking cool looking. So
there are a lot of models that are fucking cool looking though.
There are a lot that we have an embarrassment of riches these days.
It is.
Every time that they bring out a different new sculpt, doesn't even matter what faction it is. Like they're by and large fucking badass.
Yeah, there's a lot of cool things, a lot of ranges.
Have you seen like the new sculpt for the new Cities of Sigmar models?
Yeah, so that range is like kind of 50-50 for me. Some are great. Some are like not so great. Like the commander on the horse with like the flat top helmet, he's kind of like pointing down at you or something like that. That guy, he's fucking awesome, dude. Like,
about the dude in the big plate mail, there's just the sword there, and he's got a big fucking shield. I'm like, fuck yes.
Yeah, he's kind of holding top of the shield kind of thing.
Yes.
Yeah, dude, that guy's awesome.
But then they have like weird vehicle things.
Yeah.
It's like, man, this is way too sisters for me from 40K, where they just like big dumb vehicle thing that it's like, oh, this is kind of a building, but we need to move, so
put wheels on it.
Let's put big wheels on it or make some people carry it. Yes.
I will say, if I paint a Space Marine ever again, it's going to be that helmet right there. Because that helmet was sent to me by a dude on Instagram who cast PVC Space Marine helmets for cosplay purposes, and I was going to paint it like a Night Lord helmet. And I don't think that counts as a model, so I'm not counting that as a Space Marine mini, but I do want to paint that thing at some point.
You might make some alterations.
Oh, absolutely, bro.
I mean, or you can just go pure decal form on it where it's like you paint on and freehand the skull.
Oh, we could do that.
Over that. That might be classier than having a bunch of gobbledygook.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, let's break this down later.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So, yeah. So, if you want to paint an old 90s Marine, it's not too late. Or if you just want to see other people doing it, I'm sure he's got a hashtag on there. So, you can go on Instagram and you can check what everyone's done. And he's obviously showing some of his screenshots or whips of his dude. And, of course, Darren painted it, so it looks fucking banana hammocks.
Dude, Darren is the sole reason why my Instagram feed is just fucking filled with stupid vintage Space Marines now, and I can't escape it.
Can't not see it.
I know. And my Instagram stories, too, it's everywhere. People are fucking painting 90s Space Marines.
Yeah. Well, how great of a Halloween costume would that be, where you just had like a cutout of a 90s Space Marine, because their pose is so jank, and it's so like sturdy, and it's just like a cardboard box where your head's sticking out, but like the Space Marine doesn't move, so you're walking around and he's still just like, because they don't look like they can move at all. All right, so I think that's cool. I think when people like do fun things that bring in the community, and that, you know, you're not reliant on a company to have us come together and do something fun, or do something that's kind of out of the ordinary that we wouldn't do, but we're all kind of bringing in arms together to do it. I think that's cool. So
yeah,
cheers on Daz. And he showed these fancy little like cards that he had made.
No, little award things.
Yeah, they look like those little golden, like the little golden demon commended entry cards.
Yeah. A little embossed, like kind of raised lettering.
Yeah. So, you know, cool. You want one of those business cards, you can work your butt off and paint a sweet ass Marine.
Hell yeah.
Welcome to the end of, I'm waiting for you to jump in to finish my sentence, but you just never said anything.
I just started doing the robot, dude.
And I was like, if I just keep saying two words at a time, maybe he'll jump in eventually. And it was not going to happen.
It did not work.
Welcome to the end of the podcast. We need to get better at that.
If you made it all the way to the end, that must mean you have high levels of toleration, or you really like what we're saying. Either way, we appreciate your time and your investment and listen to what we have to say.
If you like the podcast and you want to support it, there are a number of ways to do that, both free and not free. Some free ways to do it are by sharing our podcast with your buds. If you think that they would also like the podcast and the topics we discuss, share it with them. If you listen to the podcast on Stitcher or Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, give us a rating over there. Let us know how we're doing. If you've got some money to spend and you want to support us, we have a Teespring where we sell merch, t-shirts, sweatpants, cups that have various logos from various like inside jokes and also our normal logo.
Which is a pretty baller logo. I forget about that time and again until I come back in here to record. I'm like, my God, fucking logo is so goddamn good.
Yeah, yeah. The people we employed and the ideas that we got people from, Falsifier666, you know who you are. Just good ideas. You know, good ideas, good execution. It was awesome.
Yeah.
If you have some other money you want to spend, you don't want to get physical goods, we have a Patreon, which we discussed earlier. Get access to an extended episode. You get us giving critique to your models. You can suggest topics. You can ask questions that we went over in today's video. Or you can just support us there, you know? We appreciate all that kind of support, both free and not free.
Yeah. So we're going to catch you in a fortnight. Between now and then, we need to drink some dues and buy some sprues. And I felt like I really lined that up really well. I was really happy with that line.
You did.
And then I had nowhere to go with it.
You did. You were in Mario Kart, and you were all the way at the end, and then the fucking blue shell just crushed you, and now you're in second.
Yeah, it's like, wah, 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 wah. And then I just start going again, and then someone wheels around me and pops a banana peel right in front of me.
Just drops it in, dude.
Yeah, we're in knee deep in banana peel territory right now. So we're gonna go get some tendies and try to get this out of our minds, and we'll catch you on the
flippity flop.